Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, the new home. I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Go away, Mako.
Don't worry. I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
I will make no such promises.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
You amuse me. I will make you mine.
You shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I can't wait to get started.
Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar the Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. If you want extensive discussion on Korra from longtime fandom members, then this is the podcast for you. I am your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Sam.
Hi.
Jeff.
Hello.
And Delaney.
Hello.
Today we'll be discussing the Book 2 finale of Korra.
Whoa! Thank you, Jeff, for making noises that made me feel better.
It has been released early on nick.com, so you can check it out at nick.com/Korra.
Good behavior on online stuff.
Yeah, because we did an amazing job of getting 10,000 notes on something on Tumblr, which is the easiest thing to do. And it'll be airing on TV next on Friday. So whether you saw it on TV or you saw it online early, no matter when you listen to this podcast, we'll be discussing the finale and spoilers ahead. So stop listening if you've not yet seen the Book 2 finale.
I don't know why you downloaded this thing if you haven't watched it.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's confusing because it's not actually been on TV yet, so I just wanted to clarify. So yeah, just straight finale discussion, and I should talk about very briefly the podcast schedule after this. This counts as next week's podcast, then the next one won't be for until like around Thanksgiving, and we'll be having more finale discussion and the season like wrap up.
When are we ever gonna do the search?
In December, so that will be one of our December main casts. We won't be doing mini casts in December, we'll be doing weekly main casts, and then after that we'll see. But yeah, for now, at DongBuFang, email us, Dylan at DongBuFang, Tumblr, Twitter at DongBuFang, and post on the forums about this podcast and the episode, DongBuFang.net/forums. Let's get right to it. Darkness Falls is the first episode, but we're going to go episode by episode, but it is hard to see a finale not from the point of view of both episodes, but these are separate episodes, separate writers and directors. We're going to start with Darkness Falls. Give me your thoughts on the entire finale first, and then specifically about Darkness Falls. Let's start with Mel.
I really liked the finale as a whole. There's obviously nitpicky things, but as a whole, I thought it actually went pretty well, especially with the way it ended, how it ended with actual consequences this time around, as opposed to the first season finale where everyone got their bending back and everyone got to go home happy. Specifically, Darkness Falls, though, was really strangely paced for me. There was so much going on, and it so quickly jumped between things. And in each section, you know, Mako and Bolin and Tenzin and Korra, those different sections, like, so much was happening and stuff in there, and I wasn't a huge fan of that. I liked the second half of the finale better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sam, what do you think?
Well, I really liked the finale. It made me happy overall, in that there was some stuff I didn't like, some stuff I did like, but overall it made me happy. The first part with Darkness Falls, I feel like it did have pacing issues. Like, there were some, like, really glaring moments where I was like, that shouldn't have happened that fast. I remember Mel said earlier on chat that, you know, she thought that the finale, like, ended at Darkness Falls. And I thought that would have been really interesting if that happened.
Ali informed me that wasn't, in fact, not the last episode.
I thought that would have been, like, so cool, like, the next season just being, like, this whole thing with, like, Dark Avatar and whatnot, but no, it didn't happen that way.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, what do you think?
Overall, I thought it was a very satisfying conclusion. You know, like, obviously, the good guys have to save the day. Like, that's just how stories work, unless you're, you know, really out there. But, so, enough bad things happened and enough changed that I think it was good. Good balance there. As others have said, not, you know, happy-go-lucky like book one was. I didn't see any pacing issues, personally. I loved the choreography and the coloring throughout the whole thing. That was amazing. It's a stronger choreography in the first half, I think. So,
yeah. What specifically about the first episode?
Korra's battle with Vatu.
Well, yeah, what were your overall impressions of specifically the first episode?
Oh, overall impressions of it were delightful. Just delightful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Delaney?
I'm about to crash the happy bus. I did like the finale overall. I think I did enjoy watching it, though I was mildly sleep deprived and haven't been in a van for several hours, but I enjoyed it, but I did enjoy the first part a lot better. Like, I didn't really have any pacing issues, but the second part made me so mad, and I don't hate the second part of the episode, but I do have a lot of issues with the second part. I mean, I think I did enjoy it over, I mean, it was alright. Okay, that sounds like, okay, I liked it, it was good, I'd watch it again, but I have a lot of issues with the second part, and I get what Mel was saying about how, like, I am glad that we have some consequences, it wasn't so happy as season one finale, because that wasn't very satisfying, but, like, did we have to sacrifice so much for Korra to get character development? Like, I will rant later when we get to what really upset me, okay. But there's just, and I did love the cameos, though, the cameos were on point.
You're the best.
Yeah, I guess we should say Zhao. Zhao, Zhao, Zhao.
Zhao.
If you're unfamiliar, we
I died.
Love Zhao in this podcast, and
he needs the song.
Yeah,
he does.
And this will further our theory. I guess we'll get to that when we get to him. So first time watching this, you know, at midnight last night. Super excited. Really liked it. I thought the ending is the best part of the thing, and it left me on a good note. Rewatching it today, I think especially Darkness Falls is really not that good. I don't know. It's not that well executed. I think certainly the dialogue is off, and the writing, just the way they execute pretty much all aspects of Darkness Falls are not that well done. I think the finale majorly suffers from Unalaq being the worst villain in all of Avatar and Korra, which I can safely say now because they gave him no motivation in this finale, which was pretty awful. I think he's worse than Combustion Man because he's supposed to be more important than Combustion Man. They both have similar levels of non-existence in the plot.
Well, Combustion Man's like was at least a mercenary. Like Unalaq, I mean, he's more one-dimensional than Ozai was.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, good thing he died.
Yeah.
Which one, both?
Well, Ozai, I guess, is dead, but we don't know.
Oh, sorry, yeah, that was dumb. Yeah, Combustion Man's toad's dead.
Combustion Man, yeah, I guess. Well, theoretically, he died. But yeah,
Unalaq, we thought Unalaq, he was immortal. No, apparently.
Unalaq's just really, really awful, and that makes the fight scenes in this, I don't really care about them. I don't like the direction they went with the Attack on Titan stuff in the second episode.
What are you talking about? That was the best.
I didn't really like that.
It was like Godzilla.
I know. I don't know why they needed to do that. And
But we had the noise, though, Dylan. We got the noise.
We did have that noise. I think the first episode fighting stuff was better, but it was still a lot not interesting. I really didn't like the ripping Rava out of Korra thing that Vatu did.
There were tears.
That Unavatu, which is what the credits call the Dark Avatar, Unavatu. And yeah, so I think there's a lot of good stuff in the second episode. And I think it's a good finale overall. I think it's definitely worse than a new spiritual age comparing it to an episode from this season. I really love that episode. And this one, these two don't really stack up. And of course, there is Deus Ex Machina's all around in the second part, and I hate them. So we'll talk about
Vatu just happened to be in a magical spirit tree that could...
Well, not even. I mean, Jinora, mostly.
I'm glad it's not just me that has, like, a lot of issues.
Yeah. I don't know.
You understood the madness last night, so...
Yeah, I know. I was super excited last night, but since
like...
then...
Where the heck did Vatu go?
Well, that's one of the most interesting
questions.
That's
such a big contradiction.
I don't know if it's a contradiction. I think that
no, we know he. I mean, he can't be destroyed. That we've established this. Neither one can be destroyed.
Yeah. So he's not destroyed. So either I've seen two main theories with this. Either the Dark Avatar will be reborn, which is the more unplausible theory. Or,
that'd be terrible.
So there's going to be a reincarnation human version of Unalaq. Or the more plausible one of Vatu is inside Rava, and 10,000 years from now will be reborn inside Rava. So that's probably what it is. But yeah, we can discuss all that.
Well, it sucks to suck for whoever that avatar is going to be.
Yeah, exactly. So not too good then. But yeah, let's get into specifics, and we'll go over I guess I should say that seemed really negative. Second episode was better, and it did a lot of interesting things. I really, really like the how they end it with leaving the spirit portals open. I think that's one of the most interesting things they've done all season. So let's start with Darkness Falls, written by Josh Hamilton, directed by Colin Heck. Tim does not get a piece of the finale, which is a little bit frustrating. Tim Hedrick. I don't know for A, B, or C plots. Like, it just, a lot of stuff happens really fast. We start out with the group on the, I don't even know what this area is called. It's in the spirit world. It's where everything
is. It's called the spiritual plane.
Plane.
I got so confused. They kept flipping back and forth. Like, I got really confused, like, where they were, and then they'd switch. And I'm like, I thought they were here. Why does everything look the same?
Yeah, it's hard to tell whether it's in the spirit world or in the South Pole.
Yeah, it just got really mixed up.
Or the North Pole, but they don't go to the North Pole. But yeah.
Do they not? I thought they were when Unalaq got knocked out the first time.
Maybe.
That looked like the forest that he was in.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay, I never even thought of that. That's possible. So we start off, like, jarringly after the last episode, and Korra goes all bonkers and kicks Unalaq out. And yeah, stuff happens. I don't know. I'm trying to. Jeff is very detailed about stuff. Korra fire blasts Vatu, airbends Unalaq out of North Pole. Avatar State Korra engages Vatu. It's your own. Okay. And Mako and Bolin are tasked with keeping Unalaq from re-entering.
They didn't do a very good job.
No, they were kind of. You had one job, Mako and Bolin. One job.
Yeah, one job.
And they specifically say that job in a line of dialogue.
Yes.
Okay, so now we're going to... Oh, and they send Tenzin out to find Jinora, which happened last episode, I guess. We have Tenzin... Okay, so what do you guys overall think of the Cloud Baby stuff in the spirit world in this episode?
I think it was really interesting, but not very well explained. Like, the Tenzin stuff made sense, and it's almost like resolution, but like Bumi and Kai didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like, they tried, but they didn't get, like, all the way through it.
I think specifically when we get to the fog spirit thing.
Yeah, that's really what I'm... Like, yeah. Like, I mean, it's fine. It's fine, and it wasn't bothering. I mean, they just happened, but then when they got to the fog, it got really confusing. Mm-hmm. Well, not confusing so much as, like, it was just like, okay, this is happening now, all right. Mm-hmm. Just, I don't know.
But in this scene, I like the spirits don't leave footprints with Bumi and Kaya.
They just fight so much.
Yeah, it's all they do is really fight. Kaya tries meditating. Kaya doesn't have a character, so all this stuff is pretty frustrating.
Yeah,
her, I think
the exaggerated ohm got on my nerves. I was like, really?
there's
like 20 seconds solid of that O.
I don't think that's true, but okay.
It was there's a lot longer than it should have been.
There's spiritual energy in every direction.
There was a commercial break during that ohm.
I don't think that's true. We need a spirit guide. Okay, so then they go to the spider cave. Grace,
let's find the creepiest cave we possibly can and ask them.
The spider voiced by Gray Delisle.
Gray!
Yeah. You did.
She voiced the mushroom.
Is that really
she also,
her one?
She also, yeah, this was the dark spirit she talked about like 2 years ago.
I'm slightly disappointed.
Voicing a dark spirit. Oh my god, never even thought it was going to be a big deal. It's a friggin'... spider in a cave.
Yeah, and also she voiced the mushroom. Yeah, and she said she tweeted more in book 3. She says so she'll be back.
Good.
Jokes on us. The mushroom was the darkest of all spirits.
Yeah, that's who they meant by dark spirit. Yeah. We need a spirit guy. Oh yeah, I just said that. Yeah, so this spider thing, you dare wake me human. Okay, so I thought this was the most interesting line. It said, humans in the spirit world belong in one place only. So it's like when Tenzin figures out how to find Jinora at the end. I think this line is more helpful than anything Iroh says. Like,
yes,
the spider says, humans only go to one place. So, you know, you could just let the spider take you to that place.
I like how the outline it says approaches Ko-like cave. I actually thought Ko was going to come.
Yeah, like, me too. I was so
out.
Yeah,
because when you need to find a spirit, Ko knows where they are.
That's true. It could have gone to Ko, but Korra does, or Tenzin. I guess Tenzin could have heard about Ko from Aang, you know?
Oh, he definitely did.
Yeah. So that would have been cool. Yeah, so then we see the stuff from the trailer originally.
There's the starfish thing was interesting. Like, just the way the spirit was depicted was interesting. Like, I liked the idea of it.
Yeah, it was like a the thing from Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
But yeah. We see a lot of stuff from the trailer that we got in before the book even aired.
That's really interesting. I didn't expect all that to be done.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't know it'd be done, and also didn't think they'd put it in, like, from the second to last episode. But yeah, they fall down the thing, and they're lost. So we see Korra starting to fight, is this Unavatu? No, this is this is Vatu, yeah. And they do the jet-powered, the Korra's shot of going towards the camera with, like, fire behind her. They do that, like, twice, I think, in this. And they're fighting, and stuff happens. Mako and Bolin are defending the Northern Portal, and...
quote-unquote defending.
Quote-unquote. and then we go... Okay, so they're switching around a lot, as evidenced by Jeff writing down everything we see. Now we're back to Tenzin. You listen to a fungus over your own brother. I thought that was pretty good. And I thought I liked, obviously, the spirit mushroom.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Good. Yeah.
Just watching it talk was just great.
Yes. It's pretty good. So then we see Iroh. What do you guys think of bringing Iroh back again?
Dumb.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, okay, not necessarily dumb. I don't know. Like, it definitely lost its effect because we're like, we already saw Iroh. I don't know. He wasn't very helpful.
Yeah.
Like kind of what you said.
There for 5 seconds.
Awesome to see it. I wonder if I can see Iroh.
So it was kind of pointless, actually.
What'd you say, Jeff?
I just think it's awesome whenever you can see
Iroh. Oh, yeah. It's great. He's great to see him, but he didn't really serve a purpose here, I don't
think. At least we know it's been 40 years since he died.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
More time.
Good data point for us, chronologists.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means Tenzin was like 10.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Then he remembered it.
Fanfic.
Fanfic.
Yes.
I still want to write the fanfic of Iroh discovering the teapot, the Rava teapot in the spirit world.
Yes.
Because he had to have talked to Vatu to find it in that place. Like, we talked about this in the New Spiritual Age podcast. Anyway. Iroh does stuff. You shouldn't be here. Darkness threatens to take over. If you enter too deep in the spirit world, you may find a place. You may find a place only the lost can find you.
Why are you speaking in riddles?
I don't understand why this is. This I don't understand why this helps them find.
I think it's because Tenzin read that book.
I guess
that ancient script that he just happened to have read that he
yeah
just
I thought that
up.
That bothered me. Like I understand. Like I'm like, yay, it's cool. Tenzin's like you're doing something, but I was just like, really, a book? Did we have to do this?
Yeah. So we're seeing what I'm talking about with the bad execution in terms of writing on this episode. Korra's like, yeah. For some reason, the Dark Avatar and Vatu like using vines. So, you know, of course.
Well, like the whole darkness thing, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
It's the only way what?
The water in the vine.
Yeah.
It's only a waterbender.
Yeah, that's true. Although Vatu can.
Vatu.
Yeah, Vatu does it here too, though.
I feel like it's like darkness. Like, it's more like they're like evil vines. I don't think they're like actual vines.
Plants are like the most evil thing on earth.
Yeah, they're evil vines. Korra gets out, and then gets into the Aang ball, as I call it.
I had a problem with this.
The one ball!
No, it's not. Aang was first in terms of what we saw. Yes,
Wan was first ever.
I had a problem with this happening, because, you know, even though it was, like, what, like, 14 minutes into the first episode, I thought that it happened just way too fast and way too easy. Like, oh, here we have, like...
Well, I knew what they were doing. It was irritating. Yeah. I was like, Unalaq's gonna come in, and I'm really anxious freaking episode.
Yeah, it was really irritating. Like, they just, like, teased it, like, oh, it's that easy that it could happen, but...
It just made me anxious for no reason. I was annoyed.
Well, it's also like, if Mako and Bolin didn't screw up, you know, everything would have been fine.
The whole entire finale is their fault.
It's just like Lieutenant. Like, God, you guys are useless.
Exactly. But yeah, this is the whole case of, oh, it's so close, but no, now everything has to go wrong. And then you have to fix it.
I just hate how easy it was.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it was just like, for them to make it go wrong, that was like kind of the worst way to make it go wrong.
But then we have Desna and Eska coming in. Hello, my feeble turtle duck. Again, they used that line several times.
I think it was used well.
I guess it was okay. Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the scene. And then Unalaq comes and it's like, don't let them escape. And we're back to Tenzin. They get carried off by the spider. So yeah, I think it is 8 legs. But it does seem like a scorpion too. Do scorpions have 8 legs? I don't know.
I don't know.
But yeah,
I should know this, but I don't.
Aren't they arachnids? Like,
I'm not sure.
Scorpions are goth lobsters, dude.
Okay.
I had one in my hand once. I should know.
Wow, that's
I didn't do it on purpose.
Then they go.
That's a story for another day.
This is a prism. Welcome to the fog of lost souls. You will never escape, says Great Elisle. And of course, in the nick of time, says Jeff. Unalaq. Jeff did the outline, by the way. Thank you, Jeff. Unalaq shows up to ruin the day.
But
Korra losing strength. Yeah, so Unalaq knocks Korra out with like just like two water blasts, and she's like done.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
This is really stupid.
I don't know. Water, again, once again, seeming OP. Just so completely in this season. And it's just so blatantly the best element. Makuen Bowl and Escape. And, yeah, they find Korra. And there's this whole, like, dun-dun of music when you see Korra on the ground.
And then this is another part where it got confusing where the heck they were. Because, like, they do this, and then later when, like, they're getting captured, frozen, like, they keep jumping. It's just so confusing where they are.
Yeah, they're in the spirit world right now, but it's hard to...
Because, like, when they switch when they're frozen, it looks like they're in the back at the South Pole. It just doesn't make any sense.
But they're still in the spirit world, yeah. And then they freeze them. And Korra doesn't do anything. And we get the Dark Avatar, yay. And we get the crest on, as Jeff says, on Unalaq's chest with eyes glowing red.
I saw a fan art that was like that weeks ago.
This is like...
I thought it was orange.
This is like in Code Lyoko when Xana takes over someone. The symbol flashes on them. That's exactly what it's like. He touches...
This is such like a video game finale.
Yeah, well, Code Lyoko is basically a video game. And this is also too. Yeah.
Yes.
He touches the portal... Purple, yeah.
Purple is the most evil color.
Apparently.
That's why it's my favorite.
That's how you know that Unalaq was evil the whole time, because he's wearing purple.
We are now it's one, true. And end of Act 1, Act 2. Now a new era of spirits and humans will begin, and I will lead them as the world's new avatar. I hate all the new avatar lines.
Yes.
I don't know what the purpose of them is.
Like, we get it. You're the dark avatar. None of us are happy with the spotlight. Stop it.
Well, I'm the old avatar, and I'm not done yet.
See? I thought that was the stupidest line that has ever happened in
life. It's a pretty bad line.
That's like when they kept saying battlements over and over again.
Thomas stands earth
and
screaming.
And it's like up there with Tenzin's line.
No, I don't think it's that bad. But I don't get it. It's supposed to be like they're going for the epic feel the entire time and stuff. But this and it I guess works if you turn off your brain. But if you think about
it
the
works
lines
because
at all,
Korra is like a 17-year-old and she's
wait. Now I watch sometimes just to lie back and relax and watch.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I think that's how I was watching it the first time I watched it. And I really liked all this stuff the first time, but upon rewatch, it seems pretty dumb. So then we're back to the fog. Okay. Okay. Because Zhao's here, and
I want to just giggle the whole time because it's so great. I paused it and died.
Yeah, I didn't. I can't believe they did that.
That was the best.
It was perfect.
That was my first moment. That was
it was the perfect thing ever. Like they couldn't have done it any better.
Well, no, I disagree. But
that was my first moment of did they just
bring Zhao back?
Is this real life
this
moment?
Is the most unlikely character to be brought back, and also there's no purpose.
Why?
Why?
It ruins
I know what it is.
Of Rough Tunes comic.
Well, it expands our canon of Zhao.
So. They love Zhao just as much as we
He's
do,
been
and this is why this happened.
The fog.
Let's talk about this. So we know when he quote unquote dies in season one, he becomes he's an Olympic swimmer, so he survives and he swims away. But now we know where he goes because he swims to the spirit world, and he gets trapped. Unfortunately, gets trapped in the fog, and that's where we stand. So my theory is that Zhao is not actually dead. He just swam to the spirit world, and is actually
I think he got plucked out by like the spirits. They're like, no, you don't just go around killing people, killing spirits, and they're like, bloop, in the prison. That's my theory.
Why are dead people in the fog? I don't understand it. I don't know if it really
makes
sense.
Well, if you get killed by a spirit, maybe your spirit just like leaks out.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Or maybe when they kill you, they're just imprisoning you. You're not actually being killed, you're just being imprisoned.
Maybe.
I don't know. I am Zhao the Conqueror.
Like
I will capture the Avatar.
Oh my God.
You've grown, but I will still defeat you.
I thought that was so
I liked how he thought Tenzin was Aang.
That was the best part.
I like that. I think everything Zhao says is, like, okay. It's
I mean, it's sad, though, because he thought Tenzin was Aang, and it's just like, no, he's not.
Yeah. Jason Isaacs returns for this, which is awesome. They get Jason Isaacs to do like 2 minutes of line, like a minute of line.
3 second scene.
Jason Isaacs is a big deal. I don't know why
Excuse me, can you come in for 5 minutes to record like 3 lines of nonsense?
Do you remember that character Zhao you did? No, I don't. Oh, well, you can reprise him again. Do you think he thought Zhao was a memorable character?
A version of him.
It's
defining role for Jason Isaacs. Forget Harry Potter.
As much as I love seeing Zhao again, because Zhao is the greatest villain ever, I don't see why this callback was necessary. I don't think it really
adds. It doesn't have to be necessary. It can just be cool.
That's fine, but
well, let's think about if we had any other callback, they were going to do something like this, obviously, because they had to show, like, you're trapped here and you go crazy, and we had to have an example of that before we had Boomy and Kaya go nuts. So I feel like I can't think of another character that would have been like. I mean, I thought it was Zhao was perfect. Like, I can't think of anyone who would be better.
I think that's okay logic. But see, I also think that's like from the spot that the writers have wrote themselves into.
Yeah.
The specific scenario, you could just not write yourself into that spot.
It's true.
But
I feel like it's definitely more impactful. Like, I don't even think that's a word, but impactful. Okay, yeah. Good. Anyway, like, I think it's. Like, it makes, like, it's just better because we see Zhao and he's nuts, and then when Kaya and Boomy were like, oh no, we see where this is going. Because, I mean, of course you can infer, like obviously when they get dropped, they're like, they're gonna go nuts, but I feel like it was just a lot better. We saw Zhao, and then we see Boomy and Kaya, and it just makes more of an impact, I think.
In a more general point, a lot of people I've seen, not a lot, but just some people are upset over the, quote-unquote, dependence on Avatar that Korra is exhibiting here. We see in a short span of time, Zhao, Iroh, and Aang all in this one, like, 10-minute stretch. Do you think that these callbacks are okay? Do you think they're not allowed, but do you think it's valid? Do you think that it's being too dependent on sympathies we had from Avatar?
Well, they weren't dependent in the first season, like, at all, really. Like, I mean, yeah, we had the... You know what I mean? Like, it just... I feel like it worked this season, especially since, you know, what happens at the end that makes me so mad, it makes sense, but I just think
think about it, like, they were all like, oh, Aang's gonna be around, like, in terms of, like, the first book of Korra, like, we were told that, you know, Ko would be back, like, these characters would be back, and, like, there was really none of that. There was just some flashbacks and, like, 2 seconds of Aang.
Yeah.
So, I'm happy that we have more characters here.
Yeah, like, it's not, I don't feel like they're being really dependent on it. Cause, like, yeah, they're like, they bring the characters back and they're used as plot devices, but, I mean, the plot for the season finale is, like, something we never, ever would have thought we'd see in Avatar. Like, there's nothing like it. Like, we wouldn't have expected the Godzilla battle in Avatar.
Giant sea pancakes.
And another thing that's, justification for Zhao. I can't think of another character they could bring back without establishing that there's reincarnation after death. Like,
yeah, honestly,
he died in a way that we can actually see him in
fog. Yeah, it totally makes sense that he'd be the one person wandering around in that fog.
I don't think they're making a statement on. I don't know.
Well, exactly. But, like, if they did anyone else, they would have to. Like, because we saw them die, right? In, like, a regular way.
Okay, yeah.
Because that would bring up questions about, like, how the afterlife works, so in this way they don't have to answer that question.
We're not even getting to we haven't even gotten to the second episode, crazy, confusing stuff, and I'm already confused with this.
Oh, you want to go in confusing? I'm pretty sure that spirits are, like, have quantum, you know, superposition going on, but I'll talk about that later.
Let's not even.
What? No. I am sleeping. I don't have time. I can't.
My brain is all.
You can talk about that later, Jeff. But yeah, okay. Moving away from Zhao, unfortunate as it is,
because we could spend like 2 hours.
Actually, we could talk about Zhao for 2 hours. We have probably have before.
We have before. Yeah. I'm sure.
Contiguous.
Korra and Unalaq are battling. Are they outside of the spirit world now?
I think they did knock themselves out.
No,
because they were in that encampment at one point too. That got beasted up by Boomy.
Beast it up.
And as Jeff notes on the outline, Unavatu can only bend water, which is
I thought it was Umvalok.
It's Unuvatu, says the credits. It's actually, it's in the credits.
I thought it was Buttalok.
It's official. It's in the credits.
That's no, terrible.
I don't care at all.
Is that honestly what it says in the credits?
It credits him as Unuvatu, yeah.
He just looks like a Lydian to me from World of Warcraft.
Oh my god.
Anyway, they have a history of doing somewhat silly names in the credits before. But yeah, he can only bend water, which makes sense. I'm glad they did it. Don't give him too much credit for getting one thing right, though. Like, I've seen people like, oh, thank goodness that they only made Unuvatu only be able to bend water.
It would have been ridiculous. Like, it would have made no sense if he could bend everything else.
Suddenly could bend everything masterfully.
Wouldn't make any sense.
And then, okay, so...
Yeah, I think it's sort of interesting how you can have the concept of the Avatar independent of the concept of bending all four elements.
Yeah, and I think it does contradict what we saw from Avatar Last Airbender, but that's fine, because they've established it in the new rules very clearly. Not very clearly, but I think they have established the new rules.
Yeah.
Korra's trapped, like, under the ice, which is, like, terrifying.
Oh my god. Oh, yeah. I can't even...
And so now cowering. We see another, you know, like, cinematic exciting moment that, if you actually, like, go back and rewatch it and not, like, within the hype, it seems kind of dumb. Korra's being crushed, and for some reason, Rava comes out and
says, I was waiting for that to happen. I thought
it was Kyoshi for 3 seconds.
I was just confused as to why she didn't go into the Avatar state before. Like, why does all of a sudden Rava have Rava to talk to Rava doesn't have to talk to her state?
To go into the Avatar state.
I know, that's why I didn't get it. I was like, really? You're being crushed. The Avatar state is a defense mechanism. Like,
I know.
So let's listen to this line of dialogue that Jeff has quoted. Vatu cannot win. Do not give in to 10,000 years of darkness. You are the Avatar. That's like high level dialogue. No, it's pretty bad. It's a pretty bad line.
You are the Avatar. The rest of it was fine, except when she said you are the Avatar, I was like, what, really? That's so inspiring. Thank you, Rava.
I wanted Korra to say, yeah, I am the Avatar.
I'd have been like, duh,
well, let's have you guys write a better line.
I'm so inspired by that line.
I think these are conscious decisions to underwrite the epic moments, and they've repeatedly had this. Starting with, really, with the book 3 finale. But
Is that on purpose?
I think they're on purpose underwriting lines so they don't get this caught up within all the incredible production values and awesome fighting stuff that's going on. I don't think this is a good decision, and I've disagreed with it for a while. I think Eren Ihaza's writing in the book 1 and 2 finales of Avatar show that you can have smart dialogue while still having epic stuff going on.
Yes, I do think that's definitely valid.
Without Eren on board, Mike and Brian have not shown a willingness to have really high-level writing within these finales. It's frustrating.
Well, kind of the inspirational talk itself doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, I don't know how you could have thought of anything to say for it to, like, actually make sense and be okay.
Korra obviously needed a pep talk there.
I've just been waiting for Rava to talk to Korra for...
Rava didn't really talk much.
Since beginnings, and it happened, but it's not that great.
I wanted Rava, and I'm glad she talked, but it was just bad.
Rava says a line here, and then at, like, the end, she's like, we have to go back before Harmonic Convergence ends.
It's like, thanks, Rava, duh. She's Captain Obvious this episode. It's like, thanks, Rava.
Vatu is amazing and laughs. By the way, I posted a video on Tumblr of Vatu laughing for a minute straight from episode 11.
I want that. No, you'd have like the 10-hour loops of that.
Yeah.
Make that.
So great.
Vatu's awesome, and then Rava just says obvious stuff. It's annoying.
It was literally a 10, 20 second laugh.
It's great.
We can put that in the quote.
That needs to be the quote. I agree.
Yeah.
That needs to go into the quote.
The whole thing, though. You have to put the whole thing.
Yes, the whole thing.
There is somewhat of a precedent. We had the fake Toph in Ember Island Players speech, the entire thing in the quote lodge. It works in the quote lodge too, so maybe we can do that. Okay, Avatar State, Korra firebends herself out. You cannot win, she says, I assume, to Unuvatu. In the valley, so now we're back to the fog of forgotten memories. I don't know what it's called.
Fog of lost souls.
Yeah, there we go.
By the way, I want to talk for a minute about their use of the word souls in this episode. Have they used the word soul before?
I think we talked about it last episode. I know. I think I brought it up at one point, but I can't remember
exactly.
I don't think they say soul in Avatar.
They say spirit all the time, but never soul.
I don't know why they suddenly have souls.
Oh, it's definitely not an Avatar, but I do think it was in the last episode of Korra.
They might have started doing it, within this book. It annoys me a little bit. I think if you start drawing a distinction between soul and spirit, it gets confusing, and they didn't really say it well.
Especially since the Rava thing, it's like, what?
Yes.
Well, in this context, isn't it just synonymous with spirit?
See, I don't know why they just can't say spirit then, because soul also has, like...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's meant to be dramatic. Like, lost souls is a dramatic...
Well, I think souls implies that it's human.
They say souls without the element of the
thought. They are human.
Context.
But
yeah, that's what I'm talking about, though. They use soul because it's inherent for a human, so that's why it's the... Because I think they're drawing a distinction between spirit and soul, because spirits are spirits and humans have souls.
Maybe.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
Because lost spirits could have anything in there, but lost souls.
That's true. Yeah. But they do bring back soul later, not in this context. I guess we'll get there. I don't know if I'll remember, but... Okay, so now we see Boomy and Kaya having their lost
meltdowns.
Kaya's is really interesting.
I think Kaya's is interesting. I just wish we had more than three words of it.
Yeah, definitely. I was really thrown, I was really just aghast when it happened, and I was like, what? What is this? What are the implications of this? Yeah. And then it was over.
Yeah. So Boomy's is, there's cannibals everywhere, and then Kaya's is, who are you two? No, you're just a vision. I have no family. You can't tie me down. See?
What?
Like, it was crazy.
I think that they're going for, the hippie element to a certain extent.
That's how I feel.
What does that even imply? Like, Boomy's makes sense. Like, he's a war hero. Like, he's gonna have all sorts of traumatizing things, and he's nuts anyways.
So, in her life, at some point, Kaya felt abandoned by her family, or she felt disconnected.
But or maybe she had, a spirit accident.
I also think this is just her, quote-unquote, free spirit, mentality, that they've told us that she has, which we really haven't seen. I think
family
is
just weigh everything down now. So
let me read
okay.
Toon Gal from the forums on this scene. My biggest problem was the wasted potential of Fog of Lost Souls. The Cloud Babies are a bundle of issues, yet the only issues that were addressed were Tenzin's. We get a comedic line from Boomy about cannibals and a throwaway line from Kaya about denying she had family. They could have really addressed their issues with Aang and could have come to the realization that he did love them for who they were. I suppose they were pressed for time, but they really should try to make room for it. I agree.
That bothered me too.
Yeah, it's really frustrating that they didn't tie up that.
Because it's
Aang
they're
a bad dad thing.
When we get there, I'm like, hey, they're going to resolve it. This is going to be it. And then it's like, nope.
Yeah. Tenzin's daddy issues.
But it doesn't even, Tenzin's all of his daddy issues don't even get resolved. It's just it's just part of it. It's not even all of it.
Yeah. Okay, so then they run away and we'll get back to Tenzin stuff. So Mako and Bolin pleading with Desna and Eska. So, in the previous podcast, I said, and I remember this because it was yesterday, I said, Desna is way more likely to, or Eska is way more likely to flip than Desna, yet Desna is the first one to express doubts about this.
Yeah, when I watched that, I was like, dude, I was wrong.
Yeah.
Wasn't he the one who said, no matter what my father's done, I won't betray him, literally an episode ago?
Yeah, so that could be interpreted, though, as he's being out so expressive because he's trying to hide his doubts, right? I think that's what that can be interpreted as. But I think Desna...
That was the whole, he flipped his robe. He was serious business. He was upset.
I think Desna should have... I think Eska should have been the one more likely to flip. I also don't think this was handled well. I think this is a major part of the episode. I said... Last podcast, I said two major things are, will they give Unalaq backstory, and how is Desna and Eska's flip going to be handled? And I didn't think either one were handled very well. This was...
They just rushed through it.
It just happens so suddenly, and it's not really convincing. It's from already not really relevant characters, and they're just, this isn't, I don't know. Anyone disagree?
I mean.
Okay. but yeah, Eska is the one that says, don't listen to him, his words are poisoning your mind. But then, okay, Bol Eska time. this was my least expected thing from the finale, by far. That they returned to Boleska here.
They did.
Bolin, we could have been together, but you left me at the altar. That's Eska. I was too scared of my feelings for you. And so Bolin has this huge confession thing, and it seems very obvious from the way they're presenting it that Bolin is not serious. But then afterwards, Bolin's like, yeah, that was acting like.
I was really surprised about that part.
That was super surprising.
Mm-hmm. He was just like, what?
I also think, not done well.
It was definitely because there were no hints about it before, and it's just really?
Weren't you just afraid for your life?
Why is it resurging all of a sudden? We know that the only thing that comes off of Bolin with Boleska in the beginning of the season is that he's just, trying to find a girl and he's like attracted to her but doesn't really develop any feelings for her. If we'd saw him develop feelings for her, this might make sense, but that really never happens in the entire season.
And then of course we were going through the whole Ginger nonsense and then that terrible.
Yeah.
Whatever, and then now this, and it's like, what?
So I think Pulaski in this episode is really not done well and handled poorly. That being said, I really like what they did with it in next episode.
Yes.
And we'll get to that, but I didn't like this, and I shipped Pulaski really hard in the beginning, but I don't think this makes sense, and I don't...
But I think the ending kind of fixes it, if the dialogue had been changed
a
little.
I don't know if it fixes it, but I think what they do in book two with it is really good.
Yeah, well, if they had changed the
not
focus
book two,
of it.
Episode two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if they had changed it more from, like, we don't really, like, if they had changed it more of, like, no, you don't really feel this way, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. This scene wasn't very good.
Yeah.
So then Eska frees them, and Desna says they will certainly perish. I don't know, I wasn't the biggest fan of that line.
Well, I was just, like, real positive. Just wasn't unexpected. It was just, like,
I'm just gonna use that line all the time in my life. So I go,
you see stupid people
certainly
walk off. They will certainly perish.
Yes, they will certainly perish.
Okay, more Korra / Unalaq. So we see the stuff from the trailer of them like having Korra like doing the water, intercepting like the water thing, and like
it's like Crossroads of Destiny all over again.
Yeah, octopus form. Yeah,
there are so many parallels to like past finales. It's ridiculous.
Which is so many parallels to Crossroads of Destiny.
What was the finale by itself?
What do you mean? Okay, never mind.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Is it me?
Yeah,
I can't listen. I was kidding, mostly just because I was stupid and thought this was the finale that it was.
All right. I thought the most parallels were with the season 3 finale.
I don't know. Parallels, whatever. So here we see Unavatu. Has this really like tentacly thing and it pulls Rava out of Korra's face.
That was really
someone
disturbing.
On Tumblr was like, he pulled Rava out of her like a tapeworm.
Yeah, that's really what it seemed like. It was really disturbing.
Is that how that happened?
It was really disturbing for a kid show. Like, I know we've seen dead bodies, you know, with Professor Zay, but like it was really disturbing.
It was just like when the purple mask like just attached to her head. That was just like when those worms started sucking on that guy's head in King Kong. Ew.
But I think more than the grossness of it, I don't understand why he was able to do this.
Magic.
Just because. Like, where else did he explain anything else?
Plot.
That's not justification. Where else
the
did he explain?
Plot required for Rava to get out, and that's what happened.
Why is he capable of doing this, but
that's
not
so disturbing.
Korra?
Because he's more in touch with his spiritual side.
Okay.
Maybe
it's because, so
like, maybe because Vatu was, like, this big, like, thing when he went into Unalaq, but then Rava was, like, really, like, tiny teapot size when...
But let's think about it from more of, like, their motivation standpoint. Like, would Rava really climb out of Korra and go and try and suck Vatu out? I don't think that would happen. Like, I just feel like it makes sense, like, from a motivation standpoint.
I just want to see, like, Rava walking out of Korra and be like, hey...
Grab brunch, like,
I guess from the, and then, like, Unalaq, like, puts Rav in a water story. I guess the overall point is that, like, it's supposed to be, like, engaging, and the finale, and it's supposed to be, like, the dark stuff is, like, it's like, but this
they're
is
going
just
for
disturbing.
The epic factor ridiculous.
I don't think this, like, elicited any sort of
but
good,
the
good
post on Tumblr where they were like, this isn't regular darkness, this is advanced darkness.
Advanced Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now we get to the Tenzin-Aang stuff. Here's the big question with Tenzin-Aang. Is this Aang projecting from Tenzin's mind, or is this actually Spirit Aang?
Oh, it's actually Spirit
Aang. Why is this actually Spirit Aang?
Why is he in the Lost Soul dungeon?
I don't have all the answers.
And so, like, the other big
then
question...
Then don't answer unless you can
like,
back it up.
And then the big question is, do they exist... So this is kind of goes back to what I think we talked about in, like, the spirit world. Like, do the Avatar reincarnations exist somewhere outside of the Avatar?
Yeah, so that's the big question. Now that Korra's links to the Avatars are gone, is Aang still out there
well,
somewhere?
Well, no, not gone yet.
Why not gone yet?
That's next paragraph.
I know, but
it's
a related question. Why is Aang, does Aang still exist somewhere, or is he completely gone?
Well, like, it was interesting, the language she used was like, my connection is gone.
Actually, you know, you remember that Escape from the Spirit World game?
Yeah.
I do.
They were, like, all just, like, chilling out in the spirit world, and Aang just, like, stumbled upon them. They didn't project from his mind.
Well, another thing about the projection, though, is that everywhere we've seen Aang in the show so far is he's, like, in his 40s or 50s.
Yeah, and he was old.
And he's young, and he's old. And I'm assuming this is when Aang died. Like, this is what he looked like when he died.
Just, notably still voiced by D.B. Sweeney, just, like, they distorted the voice. I think what they're trying to do here is that this is Aang in the spirit world, and this isn't just a projection. And I think they also think that avatars exist in the spirit world, just without, like, even without Korra's connection, which I don't like. Like, I think, I thought the only reason that they, avatars, like, their images still survive is because they're within the avatar spirit. I don't see, but I guess this relates to the question, how is Zhao in the spirit world? Like, how does that make sense?
Well, I think it makes sense from the avatar standpoint, because the avatars and Rava are one and the same. So, and Rava's a spirit, so that makes the avatars spirits, too. Like, I feel like there's a connection there. As long as Rava survives, the avatars survive. Because, like, they're...
Well, Rava can't... What do you mean by the word survive?
Well, like, I mean, like, they're connected. I mean, the Rava's a spirit, and, like, she's... And they're, like... like, from my theories before, like, what we've seen now, I think the avatars and the spirit are much more connected than I thought before. Like, I feel like because Rob is a spirit, the avatars are, they're part spirit, and that's why they can survive, that's why they can be in the spirit world. Like, that's why their images remain.
Mm-hmm.
And by, like, survived, I just meant,
yeah, the connection. I think this episode definitely thinks that, despite the fact that Rava is reborn, that current version of Rava was the one that held the imprints of the avatars.
So but it doesn't make any sense because she can't be destroyed anyway.
Yeah, but like it's like, okay, like imagine Rava as like a hard drive.
And okay, yeah, I figured this is what you were going to go. Yeah, I figured so, this was like, going to be your analogy.
The that old avatars are stored on that hard drive. So, but when
the hard
Rava,
drive crashed when, and the genius bar couldn't save them,
or someone wiped it, and now. There's a hard drive, Rava still exists. But...
Which is what happens when you pummel a hard drive with water tentacles.
Exactly.
Jeff knows these things. He's a computer science guy.
Yeah, so that's the... I think that's what's going on here.
Rava is...
So is the new opening for next season going to be water? Water. 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 Water.
No, oh my god.
I didn't think of that.
That's terrible.
I have so many problems with this. Oh my god.
I mean, this season was already...
I don't have problems with this, and I think I'm the only one. Well, not the only one. That's not true.
This season is already the water season, and now next season.
But, water, I did like, though, when he was smacking Rava up and down, how Korra felt it, like, every time that it...
Okay, quickly before we get back to that, the Tenzin, the Aang and Tenzin stuff. You are
all right.
So this, once again, I think this is just the completely dumbed down dialogue. You are right. You are trying to hold on to a false perception of yourself. You are not me, and you should not be me or Tenzin. Okay, that's like the most bare bones way to say that.
I think it makes sense though because Tenzin's lines are terrible, and I still think this is a projection of Aang. Like, I do think Aang still exists. I still think Aang exists in the spirit world elsewhere in his young self, but I think this is a projection.
Okay, yeah,
and it makes sense because like. Tenzin has terrible lines.
Yeah, actually,
the projection
actually,
of Aang.
When I first saw it, I agree with you, Delaney, that I thought this was supposed to be a projection because why would we see older Aang unless that's what Tenzin remembers?
I wonder how they choose, like, what versions of themselves they weren't, like,
I've been
roaming around in the spirit world and within the Avatar's mind.
Yeah. So then he says, I am Tenzin. And there's the fog away, and then we see a bunch of random
people. I think I can.
I saw someone. Yeah. I'm going to be referencing a lot of stuff I saw on CO, which is a board on an internet forum that shall not be mentioned. But one guy's like, why doesn't he save all these other people in there?
Yeah, Tenzin.
Why does he save them? And
why are you being selfish?
And then I saw more responses. His hands were full, so he couldn't save them. And also, those aren't physical people. Those are spirits of people.
Zhao's a physical person.
Is Zhao a physical person? He couldn't
see
a spirit.
Yes, he swam there.
Okay, if he swam there, he's a physical
person. Through the fog.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I had a really bad problem with how, like, the fog dissipated as soon as Tenzin, you know. Like, I was like, come on, that's
is this
ridiculous.
Like a video game level? Like,
but then
really?
I thought, like, they've already established that humans have control over the spirit world by their attitudes.
Oh, true!
So
I didn't think about
if he's,
that.
Like, all self-centered, like, or, like, self, you know, confident, then shoom.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Or maybe because, like technically, Tenzin defeated the spirit for, like, a moment, so, like, that provided an opening.
Why was Tenzin so special? Was he, like...
Because he is Tenzin. He is Tenzin.
Well, he's not special. He's just a very self-confident human in there.
Yeah. It's not that he's any special. He just figured it out, right? Yeah. So, how did Tenzin solve this? Either he somehow figured it out, or Aang helped him.
Strong-willed.
Depending on whether this is a projection of Aang or this is actually Aang. So we don't know. But then either way, he saves Jinora. Jinora wakes up. He's like, yay, daddy. And more,
yay, daddy.
Yeah, more just completely bad lines. And yeah. So, okay. So now Unalaq drives back Mako and Bolin and incapacitates them. Whenever Mako's hurt, you know, that's a good thing. And
yeah.
I
know, it's great, right? He repeatedly strikes Rava. Okay. I think this was the most, I really dislike, except for the, lines of Spirits Only Footprints and the mushroom line. I think this is, other than that, I really don't think anything else in this episode was particularly well executed, except for this scene, because this scene is very emotionally effective, and it's, yep. I think it's very well
done. I cried.
Bye, everybody.
I just think.
Bye, everyone.
This just shows, like, this isn't even the writing, this is how they executed this production wise, how that can totally boost up, Avatar, especially these epic finales. But yeah, with each blow, another past life goes up in sparkly smoke, says Jeff.
I was crying. It was, oh my god. Yeah. I can't even deal.
Yes, Mel? Okay, I think
I did like how, sorry, I, no, ah, sorry. I did like how, though, every time it happened, Korra felt it.
Yeah.
Like, she tried to get up, and then he smacked Rava again, and another life would go, and she'd just fall back down.
Because that shows they're connected even when Rava's gone. Like, yeah. The connection remains.
Plus, I also liked how, when she was laying on the ground and tried to reach for Rava, like, it shows, I think, kind of also this sort of partnership that you saw with Juan and Rava. That's not just one being, it's that they go together.
Business partners.
Yeah, exactly. Eventually, he cuts Rava in half, and she dissolves.
I'm done.
Vatu's crest once again appears on Unalaq's body. Yeah, so more Xana symbols.
I have the most problems with this connection thing. Like, it's just, it killed me, and I'm just so upset it happened.
Yeah, this was very emotionally, like, in a good way. Like, I think this scene is very well executed.
Well, like execution-wise, I think so, too, and, like, the emotional aspect, definitely, but I do not like that they did it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay.
Because I feel like we did all this work, we had to sacrifice so much for Korra to have character development, and I'm like, really, this has to be fixed.
Okay, let's save this, and we'll have a larger discussion on that. Yeah, I also think this scene saves the episode, really. Like I said.
Oh, yeah.
I think without this, this is a much weaker episode. Jinora...
Well, they're, like, straight to the feels.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. Jinora senses something as... She's like, I must go. Take this light spirit.
What does she have the force? Like,
I love it. She's like, my people need me.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything they do with Jinora in this makes
Let's
no
just
sense.
Wait until later.
Makes no sense.
It's absolutely nonsense. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I'm just confused for the rest of the episode.
If it wasn't Jinora, it would be the worst thing ever. Even with Jinora, it's still pretty bad, but it's like slightly less offensive because Jinora is amazing.
It's like, is Jinora Jesus? What is going on?
Jinora is the Messiah. Yeah, exactly. So then Tenzin and them leave and stuff. Okay. So now we see Unavatu transform. Jeff says Mega Unalaq. Yeah.
I like this.
More like Titan form of. Or Godzilla form of...
he's a kaiju. He's Republic City's kaiju.
What is kaiju? I don't even know.
It's the things from Pacific Rim. They're the giant
aliens. I never saw Pacific Rim.
It's like,
so,
it's like a genre in like Japanese stuff. Like,
so, I should say how he like started transforming, like it was really, we'd never seen anything like that on Avatar. Like how they portrayed that happening.
It's like Power Rangers.
Yeah, it was very strange. Yeah, and then 10,000 years of darkness begins. And that's where the episode ends, right?
Just 10,000.
Yeah.
Only 10,000.
I am correct, though. That's the end of the episode?
Yes.
Okay.
Advanced darkness happens at the end of the episode.
Yeah, great. Okay.
Listen.
So, okay, so Unavatu stuff, past lives destroyed, Beleska, callbacks, we hit on that, Destinesca turning, Fog of Lost Souls, great. Okay, let's talk about the, why, Delaney, why didn't you like that the past lives were destroyed?
Well, I know part of it is because, like, it's Avatar and, like, they're doing this, but, like, so, the whole time we're like, Cora needs character development, Cora needs character development, Cora needs character development. So we have her lose her memory, and then so she finally gets to be her own person, we kill all the other avatars. Like, it just, it bothers, like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, why are we doing this? And I feel like it's just destroying a lot of what Avatar built up. Like, the Avatar is a cycle, and that the whole, what makes the Avatar who they are is because they can talk, they can still talk. They have, it's collective knowledge. Mm-hmm. It just, I mean, I know a lot of it is my feels, and it's just really upsetting, but, I mean, I just don't get it from, like, a storytelling aspect. Mm-hmm. I get it from an emotional appeal, and I understand that they're trying to do character development, but it's terrible.
I think that, to a certain extent, this was very much done because they wanted to have consequences for the finale.
Yeah.
You gotta cut the cord sometime.
I also think for some reason it seems like this, like, wants to be them getting rid of the past lives, and I'm not sure. Lauren on the forum says, I don't think that Korra's connection to her past lives have been completely severed. Maybe next book will tie into her needing to explore and reconnect to her past lives. That would definitely make future books interesting for us with some amazing flashbacks and deeper in the history of the Avatars. My only worry is that Korra said to focus on creating your own path. I hope they don't come up with brand new things and forget about us.
I will not be happy unless the next season or the fourth season they try and reconnect, because I can't, like, it just, like, it's what the Avatar does. Like, it just, I just feel like they've been rewriting the rules. They've been making up all these rules, and now they're just, and not only are they doing that, now they've, like, wiped the slate clean, and I don't think they wiped the slate clean in a very satisfying way.
It would suck to be, like, the next Avatar, and Korra's the only Avatar I can talk to.
Exactly. Yeah, like, just like, what?
Hey, Korra, what should I do?
Everyone hates on Korra being a bad Avatar.
Hey, Korra, how's it going, Korra? Yeah.
Toon Gal on the forum says, seeing the past lives of the Avatar being erased was painful to watch, and the fact that they are implied to be gone forever just made me really sad and even a little angry, but this works well with the theme of defining who you are. Korra had spent her entire life building up her identity as the Avatar without really knowing what it truly meant. Then from Wan, she learned what the Avatar really was. Even after learning the truth and accepting her duty, she was still following Wan's example. But Korra isn't just the Avatar, just as Tenzin isn't the airbending son of Avatar Aang. Korra is Korra, and she can choose her own path and decide for herself what it means to be the Avatar. And without the past lives of previous Avatars to guide her, she is truly standing on her own.
Yeah. Like, I think, like, I completely accept, like, I get that's why they did it, but I don't think they had to do that. I feel like there's a better way they could have done this other than, like, kind of like with Aang and Roku. Like, that was ridiculous in the comic. It made no sense. It's like, this is stupid. And now this is that times, like, 5,000. It's like, really? Is this necessary for them to make decisions and be a normal human being? We have to, like, just take away all their options?
Yes, we do.
Like, it just doesn't make any sense. It's just, like, it's like crying over spilled milk, which is a stupid, but you know what, it's making a big deal out of something that could have been handled in a much smaller way.
I don't really have strong feelings on this.
I
honestly really like the fact that happened, because the idea is, like, it's a new cycle. It's a new age.
It's a new age, as Mel is saying before she cuts out completely.
Yeah, I like it's Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to. The point is, it's a new age, the cycle rebooted, and that's what happens.
I can see, move past it. I guess I like what they're trying to do. I don't particularly hate it. I guess,
like, I get it. I get it entirely. I hate it.
What are your thoughts on this? Tell us on the forums. Okay, so that's it for this episode. Let's grade it. 5 is an average episode of television. 10 is the best episode ever. And give me your grade and why for Darkness Falls. Let's start with Mel.
I'm gonna give it probably a...
We'll never know. We'll never know what Mel would have
been. I was really... Sorry. I have to... Listen.
Okay, start over, yeah.
So, did you...
We heard none of that. Start over.
Gosh darn it. Okay, so I'm giving it a 7.8 because the pacing, like, the amount of just things happening all at once was a little much to take in, but it was very entertaining.
Talk about the pacing. What did you mean by the pacing?
There was, like, three different plots happening in that. You know, it was Mako and Bolin and Korra and Tenzin. Occasionally those plots, like, mixed in with each other, and they just cut so quickly between all three of them constantly. Like,
is part of what you're referring to that, like, okay, so for example, Korra gets Vatu into the ball and is about to seal him. Cut. Now we're at Mako and Bolin, and we see them coming in. Cut back, and now the consequences of the previous scene are felt, even though that Korra was right about to put him into the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think my problem is that I'm not used to on this show having three plots of equal importance happening at the same time. Because usually it's the A plot and the B plot and maybe a C plot.
I think the way they cut, for example, on what I was talking about is pretty jarring at points. We don't really see stuff like it in previous episodes.
They were very jarring cuts between story arcs. But that's a me issue. But, you know, it was a very entertaining episode, minus some dialogue issues. Like, I thought it was very well done. The animation was great. The battle scene between was the battle scene between Korra and him happen in this one or the next one? Definitely this one. It was really good.
This is the non-Giants battle in this episode. Whatever you're about to say. Exactly. We heard none of that.
Everything. Just take it and move on.
Okay, that's Mel's thoughts. Sam, what would you give it out of
10? I'm glad that Mel is back so I can have an accurate rating. So, I'll give it a 7.5. Because it was, I liked the animation. And I liked all that stuff. It was worth above a 5 anyway. And I thought it was enjoyable, but like there were issues like pacing. Like Korra putting Vatu in the ball thing, that was like really little for me. I didn't really feel anything when the whole like past avatars got killed, whatnot. I didn't feel that at all, but that's me. Am I broken?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
I don't know if I like so much felt stuff as I thought that was just really well executed. I guess I would say describe it as emotionally affected, even if I personally might not have been as, I guess. Okay, Jeff, what would you give it out of 10?
I'd say a 9. The cameos, choreography, fight scenes, the coloring, the emotional thing with Rava. Just it was all awesome for me. And I didn't see any like pacing problems or. But yeah, there was some not so smart dialogue, but whatever. It's awesome.
Delaney,
I actually have 2 scores. And it makes sense, so I'm about to explain it.
Okay.
So, like, just watching it, like, because as I was going through the episode, I mean, I was really enjoying it. I do agree it was very jarring at times, because, like, what Mel said about how it's important, all three plots are equally important, it was just like, oh, all the stuff happening and craziness, and just really jarring at moments. And then, like, because it just really took you out and then threw you back in. So, like, just watching it and really enjoying it and kind of ignoring the end, 7.5. But I mean, the ending, like, I really appreciated the feels, and, I mean, I cried, and I was just like, oh! But, after, like, when we moved on, and then toward the end of, like, the second part, like, my second score I'd have to give is, like, a 6, because, like, from the, not just because I hated it, but, like, from a storytelling aspect, I feel like it was, like, I get the emotional appeal and, like, what they're doing, but, like, at the same time, it was, like, just, like, they're throwing an entire TV show away, I feel like. Because, like, the Avatar, the big focus was the cycle, and I just feel like they're throwing a lot away at this point. Like, they're rewriting all the rules, and I just really didn't enjoy them just throwing everything away.
Okay. Obviously upset at the past lives.
Though. I'm just, I will never be happy again until they fix it. Like, I'm just so upset.
Okay. I'm at a 7.5 with this. I think without the past lives being destroyed, how well executed that is, this is, like, a 6 or a 5.5. Like, when I was watching it, it's a 9 the first time, but upon rewatch, it's like very clearly to me a 7.5. I really, really disagree with their decision to underwrite these finales, and they will continue to not be incredible episodes to me until they fix that. Okay, next episode. For you, the listeners of the From the Spirit World podcast, Audible has a free audiobook download with to go checking out their service, audibletrial.com/FTSW. You can get a free audiobook download, a free 14-day trial, and actually it's free. You have to give them like a credit card or PayPal, but you can cancel it before the 14 days and it's free. And yeah, Delaney has a recommendation.
All right, read this a week ago. It's Shatter Me by Tahereh Mafi. It's post-apocalyptic, I'm pretty, like, sure-ish. Like, there was, like, a nuclear war, as usual. And, like, the human race...
As usual.
As usual. I feel like the last three books I've recommended have been, like, post-apocalyptic.
All young adult novels are post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, it's true. So, the world's, like, the weather's messed up, like, people, like, the food isn't grown very well, but, and it's also another one of those psychological books. I'm just in a trend, but, it's about this girl named, I can't actually remember her name, that's bad. Her last name's Ferrars, that's all I remember because it's French. Sorry, like, I mean, it was a week ago, I'll remember her name in a minute. She's in prison. She cannot touch people. She actually killed a little boy. That's why she's been in prison. She cannot touch people, like, it injures them terribly, and so her family hates her. She's been in prison, and she's been in isolation for almost a year. And it's just about, and the entire world's been taken over by the reestablishment, which is, you know, it's the whole oppressive, we think we're doing the right thing, we've lied to you, and now we're making the world terrible, things like that. And it's just, it's very psychological, and her coming to terms with, like what's really interesting, I don't know if anyone's read The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
I have read The Road.
It's very similar stylistically. It ignores a lot of grammar rules. It's very stream of consciousness. And because she has a journal, and not every page, but it happens a lot throughout the book, that lines are scratched out. Now, you can read what it says, but it's just really interesting. Like, in dialogue, it happens. There's a line scratched out, and then new dialogue. So it's just very interesting, just these insights into the characters' minds, and there's a lot of action. It just... really emotional. Like, I felt like crying every other page. It's just heart-wrenching, and this girl coming to terms with she finds someone she can touch, and, like, she's finally having human contact.
And people, and that's where that's where the romance comes in.
There's lots of twists. Lots of twists. You are right, Dylan, but it's really emotional, and it just, like, I just felt like crying every other page, and it's a series. The second book is called, I can't remember anymore. Maybe if I can find it real quick.
It's fine, yeah. But
it's really good.
Just give the name of the first book again.
It's Shatter Me.
Shatter Me. Okay, check that out.
It's Shatter Me, Unravel Me, and Ignite Me. And Ignite Me is not out yet, and then there are, you know how authors are like, I'm going to release, I can't talk today, special, like, ebooks? Well, two ebooks are going to be published in, actually printed around when Ignite Me comes out, so you'll get to all the story.
Okay, cool. Check that out at audibletrial.com/FTSW. And thank you, Delaney. So, let's move on to Light in the Dark, written by Mike, first one in a while, and directed by Ian Graham. Let's go around the horn, give me your impressions of specifically Light in the Dark. Let's start with Mel. Or not, you know. We can't hear, so why would it matter? Let's wait for her to catch up.
You want to do that?
No. Okay.
Mel, I'm here. Over. I can hear you. I can start.
Okay, go.
All right. I didn't even start to begin with, so opinions of the episode. I like this one a lot better than the first one for multiple reasons. Writing, pacing, all that. I did not like the giant fight in the Bay, UA Bay. I thought that was the weirdest thing I've ever seen, but that's fine. But overall, I actually really liked it a lot as a finale. And I think I actually liked it better than the season one finale, so.
Cool. Sam, can you talk now?
Yeah.
Okay,
what
do you think?
My mom was good. Well, it was definitely a finale.
Wow, that's great feedback.
I completely agree with you, Sam. Like, I get it, totally.
Things happen. I really didn't like the giant monster fight. It was just really silly, and I didn't like it, but I liked other things that weren't that.
Okay.
So.
Great, okay, thumbs up. Thumbs up, good. Jeff, what did you think?
I thought it was a pretty solid conclusion to the series. Kept with the themes. I was not a fan of some of those Deus Ex Machinas that we've hinted at on the way. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Delaney, what do you think?
I'm firmly in Sam's boat. Okay. I kind of have two aspects.
Does Sam have a boat though?
You also Sam think has a boat.
I have like a driftwood piece.
But okay. Like for me, it's kind of like the whole past lives thing. I kind of have two parts of it. Like, first of all, I was sleep deprived in the hotel bathroom reading this, watching this, and I'm like, this is epic. Oh, the 4-year-old inside me was like, there's a giant. I love Power Rangers and they're fighting. But then the reasonable 17-year-old part of me was like, this is stupid. This is Godzilla. They ripped off Godzilla, and what am I watching? This is Godzilla and the Mothman. Like, what
it
is this?
It just reminds me so much of Katamari Damacy, if you ever played that game. They have, like, little monsters fighting.
It was such a video game, and I'm just like, what is... And the Jenora thing, it just... Like, I think I liked this less than I liked the first part. Like, just because of the fight scene. Now, like Sam, I liked other things about it, but the fight scene, I'm just like, this is ridiculous. Now, I liked that we had the sound. I liked the sound when Vatu's like... opens his chest or whatever. Yeah. I just like the sound. Yeah. But it was terrible. And did we really have to knock over Aang's statue?
Yes.
Like, first of all,
it's the worst statue.
We also saw that happen twice because Korra saw it happening.
Everybody like, just hates that statue.
First of all, not only has Aang's past life been destroyed, we have to knock over his statue. Like, is this not enough pain?
No, first we put like an Ahmad mask on it.
Yeah.
Now it's like,
terrible.
And how are they gonna put it back up? Like,
solid iron or something.
It's so King Kong and Godzilla like destroying the Statue of Liberty. Like it's ridiculous, and they're fighting in the bay like it's Godzilla, and it's ridiculous. So yeah. I have a lot of feels on this too. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't really care about that fight, and I don't have much to say about it. Other than I didn't care about it. The Jenora thing is ridiculous. I hate energy bending, and I hated that they had it here. I think this was a stronger episode overall because the writing was more fluid and dynamic. Obviously, I care a lot about the writing and dialogue. I actually agree with Sam, too. It was certainly a finale. And
certainly.
I really, really like how it ended, and it's super interesting going in the next season, even though I originally really loved this episode. I like how Valeska was handled. I like that Mako and Korra broke up, but I don't like how it was handled. Some people have really liked how it was handled. I don't really.
Where's Asami? Was Asami even in this?
Asami was in there for one.
She had one line.
We forgot to mention that. I hated that there's no Asami. Yeah. And I think it was a strong episode overall, but also for me, very much clearly weaker than A New Spiritual Age.
And you totally called Jenora being a plot device, but we didn't even realize the extent to which
to the extent it was to which plot it device. Did, yeah.
But yo, why didn't they call this A New Spiritual Age? It makes so much
sense. This one made more sense as A New Spiritual Age.
Makes more sense.
Yeah.
What was this one called?
I mean, Light in the Dark is a good title for this.
Well, I really liked it, and for me, there's a lot of Cave of Two Lovers feels because like I associate that a lot with Light in the Dark, but it makes sense just from what Korra, but like it only makes sense for like 10 minutes. So I feel like A New Spiritual Age.
I think they just need to hire somebody to specifically come up with titles because they're just
the thing is that they were so on the nose and on the nose a good thing. They're doing a good job at the beginning of book one. Like I've said this 1,000 times. Voice in the Night is the best title that Avatar has.
Yes,
but yet it's gone downhill. I agree.
Like, I feel like they should be on the nose, but then they should still be vague. Don't give it away.
Night of 1,000 Stars makes no sense and has nothing to do with that episode. Okay. We didn't mention
Bolin's a star.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I can think of in your heart. Okay.
It doesn't make any sense.
Okay, we start with Republic City being defended by police blimps and General Iroh's fleet. We bring in Dante Bosco for one line.
Saw Lin.
But he's not doing anything better with his life, so...
That's me.
Got more spider Lin. I was excited.
That's pretty harsh.
I'm sorry, Dante Bosco.
Yeah, he's not getting many roles.
I didn't mean it.
We have Titan Unalaq / Mega Unalaq / whatever the thing in Pacific Rim is called. Kaiju makes his entrance into the bay. It's time to take back the physical world.
Can we talk about the zippy thing? Like,
this would be a good line if we understood Unalaq's motivations, but we do not. Ships fire at Mega Unalaq. No good. Mega Unalaq destroys them. He knocks down Aang's statue.
It's made of solid adamantium. That thing does not fall apart.
I like that he had to like struggle a little bit to like uproot it and take it down. Because like
makes sense because it should have like
He would have been way too OP if he could just like completely.
Just make the statues in parts. You know, like the Statue of Liberty was made in parts.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, at least they have earthbenders and stuff. Well, at least he didn't like punch it and it just shatter. That would have killed me.
Yeah. Very interesting.
It's shatter in slow motion.
That's how structure works.
God. Korra is lying in a pool of water. Oh yeah, Kaya says, let's get them into some spirit water. I like how they've gone from introducing this concept of healing spirit water in book one of Avatar.
Throw everyone in water.
To it's just, you know, let's get some spirit water. It'll
there's spirit water everywhere.
Not even let's get some spirit water.
Whatever Mel was about to say. Whatever, let's throw them in some spirit water is what Mel's going to say. Okay.
No one is hearing my jokes. Because I'm cutting out.
Say it again.
And it's making me really frustrated. I said that it's not even spirit water anymore. It's just someone has a boo-boo and they just throw them into a giant like pool of the stuff.
Oh, you have a splinter spirit water.
Yeah, exactly.
It would suck if it was salt water, though.
Go to the spirit world while there's spirit water. That makes sense.
I was confused about where
are they going to get spirit water from? Oh, the spirit water. Okay, that makes sense.
Spirit water with special healing properties. Duh.
Jeff says scanning electron healing mode enabled. I like it.
It's like the meow, yeah. Meow.
There we go.
Meow.
I was able to rescue her soul, but she wasn't ready to enter her body yet, says Tenzin about Jinora. Yeah,
okay,
great.
That's great.
Okay. Vatu ripped her right out of me and destroyed her. Okay, well, Korra's explaining what happened.
She's terrible at explaining things.
The last Avatar. I'm so sorry, Tenzin.
Well, I don't like Korra crying.
Why are you apologizing to Tenzin? Like, yeah. He's not Avatar. Like the Avatar King. Like,
Avatar the last Avatar? Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god, Avatar the last Avatar.
Yeah, that's the name of our chat right now. That's good. Okay, planes around Republic City taken down by dark tentacles. Okay.
That sounds so terrible.
Mega Unalaq beam disables President's blimp. I don't know why Blimp and the President needed to be there. Also, they cut to these reaction shots of Pema.
Those were the best. Yeah, Milo, the kids, oh my god.
Milo and Iki. Those were fine, except once they had something major happen, and then they immediately cut to the reaction shot of that. It was when Jinora came down, and he was like, oh.
Be careful, sweetie!
That was funny.
I liked the be careful, sweetie. I also liked that she's be. Yeah, I like the reactions, but I don't know.
Milo
like
cracking me up.
Milo with It's a Giant Monster, yeah.
Iki is just like the one person who always announces Korra's back.
Yes. It's like
she
come on line.
That's her job of life.
That's her only job, yeah. Okay.
She's like Shiro Shinobi, but just for Korra.
Korra's huge, yeah. Lin carries the president off safely. Megumi
Lin is like
Spider-Man.
Lin is basically non-existent in this season. Megunok overruns Republic City with vines. Shiro Shinobi signed off from that?
Taking over Republic City. It's more Batman. This is Gotham City.
Oh, we get one of my favorite parts of the finale. Last podcast yesterday, I remember because it was yesterday, I said, we will not see Varric in the
finale.
You were
wrong.
I was wrong. He has a 5-second scene. Great.
He's Leonardo da Vinci.
My point was, he wouldn't be a major part of the plot, which he wasn't. Vines destroy the walls of the prison. Commence Operation Winged Freedom.
A hidden endorsement of Attack on Titan because there are the Wings of Freedom is their logo.
Ah, I see. I don't think. Yeah, when they were writing this Attack on Titan.
No, they for sure were.
You think this was for sure Attack
no,
on Titan?
No, I'm totally joking.
Okay.
Lee cracked me up though, the way she ran up and like spider monkeyed hugged him. I was done. It was just so funny.
And John Michael Higgins kills this line with the dramatic reading of Do the Thing. That was
Do the Thing.
That was great. Okay, Mel has to go. Mel, before you go, give us your grade of this episode and the finale overall. Well, you know, if she could talk. Then we would hear this. Let me predict what Mel is
I can't win.
Okay, this episode and the finale overall.
This episode, I'm gonna give it. It's weird because I liked it better, but I'm gonna give it a 7.5, which does not make sense at all. But
okay. What about the
Deus Ex Machinas were not something I was happy with, but it was more watchable, I think, than the first half, just because I liked the way the pacing happened a lot better. The finale as a whole, I would give probably a 7.5 also.
Okay.
Gotta go before I can't be heard ever again.
Yeah, thank you
again.
For joining us, Mel. Have fun doing whatever you're doing. Goodbye. Okay.
Right.
Dramatic Do the Thing. I really like that. I thought that was good. At least I like that they're setting up Varric for coming back maybe in the future.
I hope you
more Varric, please. He was the best character this season. Back with Tenzin and Korra in the spirit world. Let go of your attachment to who you... Okay. this okay. was one of my favorite parts of this episode. This is a big thing that I've been on. I think a lot of, recently with debating Delaney, but a lot of stuff, like, I'm very much in favor of the avatars being their own person independent of the avatar. And they've never really hit on this too much in Avatar or Now, and I'm really glad that it's a major plot point, because this is something that makes sense with Korra. This is the culmination of Korra's plotline, and it all comes together, I think, pretty well. Yes. I thought Toon Gal explained it really well when I read it before, but it's Korra was prepared to be the Avatar her entire life. We see her when she's like 3 initially, and she's like, I'm the Avatar, and she's never really her own person outside of this. She's always preparing and being isolated, and this is, I don't think it's super effective, because I think you have to think about it a lot in order to get this. I don't know if it's readily apparent, but I do think they pull it off. And I think this is a major reason why this episode comes together really well.
When you say debate, did you mean, like, just for the past lives? Because I've always been a thing that the avatars are their own person.
No.
It's just an aspect.
I guess, like, in a minicast, I remember us talking
about okay,
this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember.
That's what I was thinking, but...
Yeah, I don't remember specifically, though. Let go of your attachment to who you think you are and connect with your inner spirit. I'm not talking about Rava. Rava is not who you are, says Tenzin. What do you think of Tenzin suddenly becoming all wise and stuff about this?
Like, I'm not bothered by it. I don't know. He's Yoda, like, he just gets to have all these things.
Yeah, I guess. It's just a little jarring.
After... I just went through my identity crisis, now you have to go through yours.
Yeah, after seeing him being all lack of confidence and then gaining his confidence, now he passes.
But who else could have done it? And Korra would not have figured it out herself.
I guess not. Yeah, well,
which is kind of the sad part, and part of why she needs more character development, because the whole being guided by men.
Yeah, that's true. But Tenzin's advice was, you be you. You do you. So, yeah.
Do you.
Yeah, you do you, girl.
Yeah,
the important thing other than that he does is he tells her about the Tree of Time, and of course Tenzin's read about this. Legends say its roots bind the physical and spiritual worlds together. I like that. Tenzin read.
I just love how everyone reads everything.
Yeah, Tenzin reads a lot. That ancients would meditate beneath the tree and connect the great cosmic energy of the universe. I don't know how that makes sense, but
I want to know what they're talking about. Ancients, like who?
Yeah, who are the ancients? I don't know.
Are they people? Are they spirits?
Katara,
are they spirits?
Yeah, exactly.
Katara
is the ancients. Yeah, they enter the tree, see Korra's memories. It was just.
I thought that was really dumb.
It was just a bunch of stuff from book one.
Yeah, I didn't like how that, like, aesthetically, like. How that looked.
Yeah, it was weird. I'm like, are there televisions in the tree? Like, what is this?
Yeah, there's LCD monitors, yeah. Did Vatu see his memories for 10,000 years? Interesting.
Ooh.
That's a really nice thought, Jeff. Yeah.
That's kind of, that kind
tormented,
of
or was it just lethal? Like, what would that
Yeah, he was just tormented by his past actions.
Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it would torment him either. Like, maybe
it just made him angry. Maybe he grew more powerful.
Yeah. Oh,
I said maybe. Powerful. Really, I said it again weirdly. I'm just gonna stop saying
maybe
it.
Maybe it made him more strong. Juan was known. Do we hear any Strongs in the finale? I don't think so.
I think we did from Tenzin, maybe.
Maybe.
Gee, Mister, you're strong.
Juan was known for who he was, not what he wasn't refined by Rava. Do as the ancients once did. Connect to the cosmic energy of the universe.
Ben, I love this part.
Ben,
oh my god.
Not the elements, but the energy within yourself.
Yay.
Does anyone like Jeff, what's your opinion on energy bending and this stuff?
I don't like it.
You don't like it either?
No.
What
energy bending being I'm not entirely sure when she actually energy bent herself.
I guess energy bending, she bends herself to have her spirit, like, grow giant, I guess.
And then Vatu, she does the hand thing.
It doesn't make sense. It's not, this isn't a it's kind of a Deus Ex Machina, Deus Ex Machina, but, okay, let's read the definition, because it's that time where we need to go over what this is.
Well, just don't, like, I didn't know what it meant for a really long time.
I was at academic team, and this person mispronounced it, and I thought of you, Dylan.
Is it, okay, pronunciation. Deus ex machina. So Deus. I'm going to say Deus. I don't know how I say it anymore.
Well, my moderator said it wrong, and I was like, ha, Dylan says it right.
Deus ex... no, I say Deus, don't I? It's not how you're supposed to say it.
Well, she said machine, so I was like, you're wrong.
From TV Tropes. Deus ex machina is when some new event, character, or ability, or object solves a seemingly unsolvable problem in a sudden, unexpected way. If the secret documents are in Russian, one of the spies suddenly reveals that they learned the language. So yeah, it's It's basically something that makes no sense that solves a giant problem, aka Jenora at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
This, I guess, doesn't fall under that.
Because it's not unexpected. Like, we've seen energy bending before. We know it can do these things.
Energy bending in the book three finale.
I've never seen energy bending do this thing.
Yeah, so...
But let's think about Guru Pathic and when this happens with Aang. Like, we don't know what it is. It could technically be energy bending. Like, opening the chakras.
Sure, but they never say
they it. Just
they never
it
say the word chakras, so I really don't know.
Yeah, Korra needs some chakra opening.
So, for the chakras theory is that we see Korra doing the same exact thing Aang did in 219. Him like crossing
the Fantasia Bridge.
Yeah, the Fantasia Bridge. Exactly.
The Fantasia Bridge.
I thought it looked so much better in 219 than it did in this.
I like
the purple.
Yeah, I like the purple too.
Yeah.
I
didn't like how big giant Korra looked.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how I'm going to reverse what I just said. I think this is a Deus Ex Machina because we never saw energy bending used like this. However, it's not as bad as in the book 3 of Avatar finale, because that was like, oh, here's energy bending. We've never talked about this before, and now it's the last episode of the show.
Aang goes on a school adventure, and look, you found it.
Yay, and that's how you're going to solve this problem.
You did it.
You did it.
Good job.
Sam, what's your thoughts on this?
Energy bending?
Yeah.
I just don't care.
Okay.
It's a thing that happens.
Is anyone like energy
bending? Like, I can't say, like, I mean, I think... Like, thinking more deeply about it from, like, the season 3, I think I like it more than I did originally.
Okay.
Because, like, I mean, I don't know, I guess maybe we've just gotten used to it, or just because I have so many theories behind it and junk, but now it's kind of, like, and then the beginnings did not solve anything about the energy bending. Like, they just keep bringing it back and
they have no answers.
Really,
did they say the words energy bending in
the
beginnings? No. Yeah.
No. That's what I think is, like, the Lion Turtle thing just kind of got thrown out the window about that.
And I was, glad that they didn't mention energy bending in
beginnings,
if they're never going to bring it up again. But now they did.
But they did.
Like, this needs to be, like, I just think it's more of an unresolved issue that I have a problem with.
I just don't understand, like, the Lion Turtle in season 3 finale of Avatar, like, they used to bend the energy within themselves, and they said that this, didn't they? And then and beginnings happens, and none of that ever happens.
Yeah.
And
we don't
just
see
makes
it in beginnings. Yeah,
really confused.
Like, is that earlier? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
So I guess my overall opinion on energy bending is it's not well executed and only brought up in finale type settings and is used as a plot device that is incoherent.
It makes me wonder.
Just
does,
add
like,
things to it.
The guys just like go up to each other and just put their hands on like people's heads and hearts and just like took people's like life out or something.
It just doesn't make any sense
that they just do that all the time.
If you're pro energy bending, email us or give me something, because I really want to see the other side on this. I haven't heard a vocal pro energy bending.
Well, I just feel like if anyone's pro energy bending, it's more of like they're not bothered at the fact that it's not resolved.
Yeah, I guess
we just don't have any information about it.
Okay, so then we get giant Korra, and
which was ridiculous.
It was really dumb.
It seems to me to evoke like there's a character in Young Justice Invasion, the kid who like meditates and becomes giant.
Yeah, that guy. Quality. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, like, there are several superheroes that do that.
Okay.
But.
Yeah. Well, I liked that, like, Boomy and all them's reaction was just like, what just happened?
Yeah, even Tenzin was surprised. He's like, that's not what
that's how I felt.
Yeah, exactly.
I was Vatu. Unavatu, I mean, whatever. More detailed than Megacorra.
Well, because
did you notice that?
Because
like,
I guess it's supposed to be because Unavatu's like a physical presence. This is just Korra's spirit.
I guess that makes
it was,
sense. I don't know.
I thought it was because Mega Unavatu, because I'm going to call him, like actually had one of those, like had Vatu bound to him, so he had Vatu's.
Yeah, that's true though.
Injury. Korra was just blue.
That works for me. I was just like that bothered me the whole time. It got to I can appreciate that they're going for epic, and it certainly was epic, but I just like this is ridiculous. Like this never would have happened in like the first series of Avatar. You know, like yes, it's kind of crazy they're flying around, but like it was much more grounded, if that makes sense. Like it sounds silly, much more realistic, but you know what I mean?
Which one is much more grounded?
Season 3 finale.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
Like,
not giant
it's much more,
around.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, this is like, what?
Power Rangers.
I just don't really care about the giants fighting or anything about this. It's pretty, it's rough. That's the main fighting of this episode. But,
like, I get the epicness, but
so
it's
then
just, like,
she, like, connects to the energy, because that apparently can teleport you, you know. And she goes to Republic City. Korra's back, and she's a blue giant, says the kids. And, yeah. Mega Beam attack. Megacora overpowers Mega Unalaq. Mega Unalaq tries to bind Megacora. She tosses him away, lands a hard blow. Okay, so then it looks, it's like Megacora comes and it's like, oh, let's overpower him. And then she like tries to energy bend him. But it's like, you're looking for something that is gone. Rava is destroyed and soon you will be too. So it's like, her goal is to find Rava within Unalaq.
And I didn't really see that as energy bending. I just thought of it as like,
yeah.
Something else. I don't know.
What the hand position was energy bending.
There's where the title makes sense.
Light in the dark.
Sam, you're genius.
Yeah, that's what they're going for, yeah.
But, like, I feel like it would have made, like, I understand that from the title aspect, like, I hadn't even thought about that, but, like, I feel like it would have made more sense if Korra would have realized that Rava is still within her. Like, you know what I mean? The good, you know what I mean? Like, the good is not, I feel like that would have made more sense than
this. That's definitely not what they're going for, though.
Yeah.
Rava's definitely not in Korra right now.
Well, I just meant, like, you know, like, just the light, because, like, yeah, I just feel like...
I could see that. I'm very focused on just trying to understand what's going on right now, because it's very not explained, which I think is a weakness. I think you can figure it out, and the mechanics of the Jinora thing, in one angle, you can figure it out, and so I'll tell you that, but it's without thinking about it pretty hard, it's kind of hard to understand.
Well, just the Rava thing for me is, like, I'm still not okay with, like, that they took Rava out of her and Rava was completely gone. Like, I feel like it's more, like, I feel like there would have been traces, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, like, why was that so easy? Yeah. Like, I just feel like that bothered me, and I feel like it would have made more sense, or, like, more, it would have tied back to the mountain with Iroh, like, the light inside of her.
I could see that. Yeah.
Now that episode makes even less sense.
Yeah. I said something after that episode. I said I said a new spiritual age was strongly hinting that Korra was gonna have to give up Rava in order to defeat Vatu, because light, you cannot have light without dark, so they would have to like merge back together. And I think all the foreshadowing from Iroh in that episode, it doesn't really make really sense with what happens.
I remember here. I said last podcast that maybe everything would make sense if we just watched Korra as, like, a whole, just all 14 episodes of the season all together.
Yeah.
I still stand by that.
I mean, we'll have to do that to see, but, yeah.
Definitely.
Let's do that for the end of season discussion.
We have to do Avatar.
Yeah, well, whatever. We'll see. Cut back to... No, okay. So then we see random dark spirits going, advancing on the Tree of Time. They're going to defend with all the people, and we see the cool shot of them each doing shooting their element at them, except Mako does lightning, and yeah.
They did it in the Avatar cycle!
Hooray!
They did, it's true.
Says Tumblr. Mega Unalaq tries to spirit bend Megacora into purple.
Good job, guys. Into purple.
He's doing the soul bending thing that he did with Jinora.
That was really annoying. I feel like
she would have been more vulnerable at that point, though, so it kind of makes sense, because, like, she's away from her body, and that's actually her soul.
Literally a soul, yeah. So
yes.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
why is purple the mystery?
And why? What does this do to a person? Like,
we don't know.
Maybe that's what the Valley of the Valley of Forgotten Souls.
I don't think so.
Maybe. I mean, it's just a thought. I don't really feel like, it's, I mean, just maybe. An idea.
I mean, it makes more sense than what they're doing. But
yeah, true.
I don't know. Cut back to Tree of Time. Eska and Desna enter on the side of the humans. I am so done with spirits, says Desna.
Well, so that's iconic, that line. I am so done with spirits.
I thought that was
that
funny.
Represents all of us.
I wish she could have stayed so that she could say
but
that.
But we are not done with the Book of Spirits, so yes.
Yeah, we are done with spirits.
That was pretty great.
What will next book be called? Let the speculation begin. We have no...
Souls!
No, please no. Okay. Megacora, almost purple. Almost full purple. Okay, so, here's Jinora coming down.
She is the Messiah!
Yeah, this looks so cool!
But it doesn't make any sense.
It looks really cool, and it's... I like that Jinora's doing something.
Yes.
But she's just a plot device. Mommy, it's Jinora. She's beautiful. Be careful, sweetie. I like that line.
That was great.
But Pema's really nothing ever more than a mother. And
did you see Rohan's face?
No, I didn't see Rohan's face.
It was the best thing. He's just like looking wide-eyed up at her like, Mom, what are you doing?
That's great.
I'll show you a post of that.
Yeah, you should post that. Sam posted a comparison between older Aang and Lincoln.
I totally see that. What the heck?
Jinora explodes in light, frees Mega.
I thought she died for a second.
Me too, and I was about to burst into tears.
That would have been emotional.
Rava revealed within Mega Unalaq, Mega Korra frees. Okay, so here's what's going on. This is they pre they pre um They foreshadowed, not pre-show, foreshadowed this with the line earlier that they brought back. He cannot destroy light any more than I can destroy darkness. So Rava isn't actually destroyed when Ulok does this. And so what Jenora is doing is she's somehow expediting the process of
maybe Rava Jenora is the light
reappearing within Ulok. Jenora's bringing the light to this because Rava's
she's
not
kind of,
gone.
She's kind of innocence. Like, she kind of represents innocence and I guess the purity of it.
Yeah, which I hate. And I hate that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like young girl representing innocence and stuff. I think that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
And she's not bringing Rava back to life, but she's somehow bringing light to Rava, which gets Rava there. Why? How can Jenora do this? Do we know?
I don't know.
You know, let's read the definition of Deus Ex Machina again. Is when some new event solves a seemingly unsolvable problem in a sudden, unexpected way. I think that's exactly what's going on here.
Well, here's, like, if you want to get nitpicky, it wasn't quite Deus Ex Machina because this was not unsolvable yet.
Well, I guess it's not unsolved because eventually Rava would have been reborn. But
my people need me.
Totally just kidding. But yeah.
Well, no, it's true though. It's not. Yeah, but in terms of the immediate future, Rava is not coming back. Yeah. So, what do you guys think of this? Is the fact that it's a Deus Ex Machina going to bog it down, or is it still cool enough to?
I mean, cinematically, it's beautiful and amazing. But from a plot perspective, it's like this has to get explained next season. Like, this makes absolutely no sense.
And you know they're not going.
They're not going. There's no way.
But, like, my thing is, like, is there a bigger thing with Jenora? Like, are we going to get a larger plot line? Because, like, Jenora, obviously this isn't just Jenora being very spiritual and having a connection. Like, there is something else going on. There has to be.
There's going to be a whole religion based off of her.
Next time Mike is doing something over in California, I'll be there and I'll ask him this question.
Yeah, ask him what's up with Jenora. Yeah. I don't understand why they keep doing this, because they saw the reaction to book 3 and the finale.
This is actually worse.
This is, I don't know if it's, I don't know.
The Lion Turtle, there was barely an explanation. Yeah, there was some explanation.
But even worse than that was the rock into battle.
Yeah, that was
The worst one.
Yeah.
And this is like, that one, okay.
Jenora literally falls out of the sky.
This is less offensive than that because that one was the resolution to an entire season's worth of plot.
Okay, fair enough.
This one is just resolution to like one episode of A New Spiritual Age. For the record, I don't think this makes A New Spiritual Age any worse because, you know, whatever. This is just ridiculous. Please stop having these ridiculous things in finales. You're going to do it again next season.
Jenora is the chosen one.
Yeah, is Jenora the Messiah? That's the question. Yes.
Jenora is the new Dark Avatar.
I want to know if Jenora's going to get credited for, like, her heroics.
Why is Jenora the new Dark Avatar?
I don't know. She was standing up there with, like...
Yeah, she was standing with the important people at the end. Stuff. Yeah. I liked that. Okay. Moving on. I'm so done with spirits. I just saw that on the outline again. I agree.
I'm so done with spirits.
Megacore, spirit bends, Mega Unalaq, he dissolves in light. Where did Vatu go? So that's the big question.
Suspiciously looks like when Rava did that, when Juan died. So I'm like, crap, I really hope they do not do the reincarnation. Like, I will be so upset.
It's just like a baby Dark Avatar.
But if they do that, oh my god.
I don't think that's what they're going for, but I think that's...
I mean, I desperately hope
so,
not.
The thing is, was Unavatu in the Avatar state when Korra did this?
Maybe.
That's a good question. He's a Titan. Does that mean he's in the Avatar state? I don't know. So that's the big debate. And where did Vatu go? He's around. We just don't know where he is. Probably he's not relevant for the rest of
I don't know. For some reason, I felt like I said earlier, that was kind of like a contradiction. How, like, Rob was saying, you know, I can't destroy him any more than he can destroy me.
Yeah.
And I felt like the implications of this was that, like, oh, Robert destroyed Batu.
I think we're going to be meant to forget him, and he's probably going to come.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen.
I think he did, I think that did show him as destroying him, but obviously he's not.
I feel like he'll be like Voldemort in a cave somewhere, and he'll just come back.
Horcrux.
Cut to explanation in the commentaries a year from now of Brian trying to justify how Batu's actually destroyed, you know? That might happen.
Like, no.
Yeah. Okay. Megacore. Now we're on to Act 3, I guess. Megacore and Rava must go fuse once again in the spirit world. She makes a grand appearance just as the spirits are about to overrun Team Tenzin's defenses. Yeah, it's like a nice, convenient timing there.
Good job.
I love how, like, I was getting really anxious the whole time. Like, can you please hurry this up? Harmonic convergence is almost over. I'm going to have a panic attack. Hurry it up.
Okay, here's the question. Why does Rava need to refuse with Korra?
Because reasons?
The Avatar, that's a good question, because the past lives are gone. What does it matter?
What does it even matter? Why does there need to be an Avatar?
Bend all four elements. I don't think she even bent like after Rava left, so we don't know that.
Like, what's the point? If Korra has had the soul searching journey and she doesn't have to be the Avatar to be who she is, why does she have to merge with Rava? It doesn't make any sense.
I'm accepting of the fact that Korra remains the Avatar, but yeah, maybe I would have liked to have seen some lines about that.
The character development, like what they've built up, doesn't make sense with what the result was.
I either wanted Rava to say maybe this whole concept of fusing with a human is too counterproductive now that Vatu might do it, so let's not even get into this. Or Korra saying, I don't need to be the Avatar anymore. I just wanted something about that.
Yeah.
This is like, every time we get some character development with Korra, like, it just gets washed away.
I don't know if this contradicts the previous character development, but I think it maybe demeans the, what we
message,
got,
yeah.
The message that what
well,
we
Well, I think,
see,
yeah. I think would have been fine with just, like, the world still needs its Avatar. Like, I would
yeah,
that
like,
line would
just,
be fine.
Just that line, right? That's
like,
fine.
It would have been perfect. I'd be like,
just,
okay,
just
I
no
accept
talk
this.
Of it, though. I'm like, why are they just suddenly gonna redo this? The whole game has changed.
Can we talk about the spiral? Can we talk about the staircase? That
was
ridiculous.
I don't even know. But yeah,
Rava was just like comfortable, just like living in a human. You know, she doesn't have to pay rent. She doesn't have to, like,
have to pay rent.
She doesn't have to find a new house. You know, she's comfortable there. It's like it'll be too much work to move out.
I agree with Sam. That's what it was.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure that is it. Jinora's spirit returns to her body. Korra's spirit re-enters her body.
But
Jinora's
you know
facial expression bothered me.
Jinora, when Jinora wakes up, what do you guys think of that scene?
I think Jinora's hair is really cute.
Yeah, it is pretty cute.
It was then that I realized how much I miss Asami in this whole finale.
I know.
Because she's just standing there. It's like, come on.
At least she was away from all the crazy...
What does she say in this? What's her line?
Nothing.
Doesn't she have a line?
Something
not
like
a single
about,
line.
She doesn't have a single line.
No, she has a line, though.
I think
what?
She says
really?
Something.
Yeah, she asks about, like, how Korra...
Oh, yeah, she asked, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Jinora says, hi, Grandma, I've missed you. And then she says, Korra, save the world. No, you save the world, Jinora.
Yeah.
Korra didn't really do that much.
I think her hair is, like, really cute.
Yeah, it's
pretty cute. She's just, like, the cutest kid ever.
Yeah, she is. Rava is much bigger. Yeah, Rava grows a lot, I agree.
Yeah, bigger than Teapot.
Yeah, definitely bigger than Teapot. They fuse just as harmonic convergence ends. Earth's purple shell recedes, says Jeff. Avatar Korra returns to spirit.
Oh, we were going to talk about the staircase to heaven.
What do you think of the staircase, Devin?
It was ridiculous.
Other thoughts?
Wait, are you talking about when they were merging or, like, the space stuff?
No, like, when they're merging.
When they're merging, yeah.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. I was like, this is not happy. Stop it.
Okay, and then it's over. Mako kiss Korra. I'm sorry about your father, but he was already... I really like this from Korra. Like, she goes straight up to the twins. Because she realizes the consequence. Because Korra, like, kills him. Like,
I think that's a lot of growth, actually, on her part.
So many people die in Korra.
Yeah.
Like,
no one dies in Avatar except...
Nobody, except Jet, but it was really unclear.
Aang kills no one except one bird thing in the desert.
Buzzard wasp.
And
so
Korra
many
just,
things die in Korra. Like, this is dark.
It's pretty dark, yeah. It seems unavoidable, but I like how Korra addresses the consequences right away. I think
I don't like how Asuka does react to it.
It's just the sudden transformation doesn't really make much logical sense, right? Like, their opinion changes so quickly, and they're just okay with this.
Also, and suddenly they have a mother that we haven't seen.
Yeah, I do like how they reference their mother. Yeah, I thought that was good. I'm sorry about your father, but he's already fused with Vatu, Korra says. Did they not? I agree. There should have been some sort of emotion from them, even if they're mostly emotionless characters.
Yeah.
Okay.
They have to go to therapy, and that'll be a part of next season where, like, we get out all these emotions.
Okay, and here's the here's the part of Boleska in this episode that I thought was handled really awesome, and it was adorable.
Yes.
And
yes.
Bolin's like, we'll be together now and stuff. Eska says, "Eternal darkness was upon us. I became caught up in the moment."
You'll
always hold a special place in the organ that pumps
my
blood.
I want that tattooed on my body.
It's so great.
I want that tattooed over my heart.
It was great. If Mike wrote those lines, I'm pretty impressed. That was pretty good. It reminds me of Mako in 302.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, like,
or 302, yeah.
Eska's, like, more, I guess, sort of monotone.
They're
more like
emotionally
detached.
Yeah, more emotionally detached, definitely, yeah. I just thought it was handled well. It was adorable. It makes me almost want to ship Bolesk again. Except yes, it almost. It seems like Destin and Esk are gone, though.
Oh, the Aubrey Plaza.
I do think they'll be back at some point.
I really like the... Who's the voice actor for Desna?
I don't remember his name.
I like him. I really thought he did a good job.
Well, I want to know how it's going to work for, like, ruling the Northern Tribe. Like, are they going to rule... Like, I'm just interested in how that will work. The politics of that.
Purple.
Yeah, will we see the Northern Tribe? That's purple. A good question. Purple.
They will... Desna and Esk will rule the tribe, and they will just put, like, a whole... Like, everybody has to wear purple.
Desna's voice actor is Aaron Himmelstein.
Good. You did a good job, guy. Yeah.
Yes.
He's not, but okay. Korra is still not connected to her past lives. Link may be gone forever. Doubt. Yeah. I want to see how they handle this next season.
Like, I want, as long as it continues, I think I'll be okay. Like, if they actually move on and they're like, actually going to try and like look for a solution, I'll be okay with it. But like, if they don't do anything with it, then I will not be pleased.
We will see.
Because it's like, really? You're just going to like throw that away?
I don't know. I'm interested to see where they go with. More interested to see with where we go with Korra doubting whether she should close the portals. What if Malak was right? What if Juan made a mistake? I hate Tenzin. I think you should trust your instincts. I hate trusting instincts. There's nothing else I can teach you. You are the avatar of a decision. I support you. Okay, let's talk about Korra deciding to keep the portals open. A lot of people have hated this because it's dumb. What? And Korras are going to come and spirits are going to come through the portals and just start killing people. One, okay, whatever. But two.
Immigration issues. I want to see that.
Immigration issues.
So, like, Men in Black world stuff.
I think that, yeah, Men in Black's analogy. I think that this is the tying the entire season together, and it makes sense given all the episodes this season. I think. Korra, it also shows growth for Korra. She saw Avatar Wan's story and she makes a decision separate from him while she knows all the information.
Which we didn't need them to destroy the past life for her to do that, but whatever.
I think that we see her interacting with spirits in a new spiritual age. We see her interacting with Iroh influences this. I really like it. I think they could have spent a little bit longer on her decision. I don't know if I love the lines of, what if Unalaq was right? What if Juan made a mistake? I don't love that line, but I can ignore it and look at the entire season as a whole and really like this. Like, this is my favorite part of the episode.
I completely agree. Like, definitely, like, and I once again, the parallels. Like, I enjoy the parallel between Aang. I know we hate the comics, but Aang and his struggle about the Four Nations being outdated. But, I mean, I don't think I would have liked it if she had closed the portals. I would have just been like, okay, this is just going to happen again. I feel like we're actually making progress. Like, problems are actually being solved.
But, you know,
as opposed to, like the non-bender thing wasn't solved. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that was not resolved at all.
Yeah, the season comes together over. Better.
Yeah, they actually solve it.
Jeff, what do you think of leaving the portals open?
I like a world-changing event. And so I think I predicted this. I can't remember. But
you predicted a lot of stuff.
Yeah, not a lot of it actually happened. But yeah, no, I'm totally fine with it. I want to see where they go with it.
Sam, what do you think?
I think it's wonderful. I think, you know, we get that, like, I'm really looking forward to, like, sort of like a Men in Black, like, immigration,
like, yes.
Problems with the spirits and stuff. And also, Boonjun gets to stay with Boomy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's great, so.
More than anything, this makes me just really look forward to next season and see what they do with it. I'm just interested. I compare
this. Korra finally made a decision.
Yeah, she did, and I think that was also part of it. I think they really do handle Korra's arc well in the
I'm definitely a lot more satisfied than I thought I was going to be, because I know we were all like, oh my god, there's all this stuff that has to be tied up. And I don't think they tied up necessarily everything in a way we wanted them to, but I do think they covered Korra's arc very well, like, in this way. Like, I feel like this was a good resolution.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, Makora. Mako and Korra talk about the relationship of
Korra. I thought that the transition to this was really fast.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, where are they now? Oh, they're in the Spirit Palace.
I didn't like that at all.
In the southern.
Yeah, side. I was confused also.
It's confusing. Korra regained her memory of the breakup in the Tree of Time. Oh, that's convenient. I'm sorry for blowing up at you. I think we both said things we regret. I think we both know that this doesn't work. Okay, let's pause for a second. Both know that this doesn't work? Why is this a given?
Let's back up. I thought that she was going to say that she remembered the whole time.
Me too.
Yeah, me too.
And like, she was doing it just because, you know, she felt she's having hard emotional times and stuff. But nothing happened. Yeah.
Yeah, but Jeff, explain, because they blow up at each other all the time? Is that why?
No, like, because she... it's just because she has issues, and...
Sorry.
Yeah.
Does this mean that Korra can't be romantically involved with anyone right now, or is she just saying specifically Mako? Anyone can.
I think she just needs some alone time.
See, I think it would have... She didn't say that, though. Like, I think I could have maybe thought it made more sense if she said, I just need to be by myself for a while. Like, I also think that would have made sense with her arc.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like, I need to be me for a while. But,
It almost seemed like this line was a nod to the fans not liking this relationship.
I'm not a fan of Mako because of how it's been handled this season. But, like, it's... For me, I'm yay, they broke up, but at the same time, like, this wasn't a satisfying, like what Dylan was saying, like, it just doesn't make any sense. Why is this happening?
Let's do some relationship analyzing.
Like, I understand,
Yes, Sam.
Oh, sorry.
I think that both of them are, like, kind of really stubborn, strong-headed people, and, you know, when that happens, like, you're gonna have a lot of fights, and it's likely not to work out, and so that's why I think...
I agree they're really not good for each other, but, like, none of us ship it here.
I just feel like it's really hard to recognize this, and, like, I don't know if it's just their problems with, like, writing romance, because, like, I understand with Avatar they had 3 whole seasons they were leading up to it the entire time, but, like, it just doesn't make any sense.
But you know what? Teenagers date, I'm told that's the thing that teenagers do. And they date, and then they stop dating.
Like, I understand people are crazy, like, these things actually happen, but, like,
another angle, how Asami was burned again by this is never addressed.
Asami.
Yes.
Hate it.
Except for facial expressions. It's like, just really, again?
Stop it with this.
I hope that we get... she just deserves the world.
Like, you know? Asami's been, like, just like with Katara in the comics, Asami's been demoted to just... She's just the girl who gets cheated on all the time.
She deserves, like... she deserves to be the princess of the world. The queen of the world. That's Asami's new position.
Yes.
The queen.
Just like Katara's president of waterbending.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't understand not addressing Asami. I like the finality of the breakup, and I didn't see it coming.
I appreciated the I'll always love you thing. Like, that was kind of okay. Like, yeah. I was like, all
right. That made me kind of really, like, that made me feel something when they did that little, like, head touch thing. Like, I was like, oh.
Nope, no, still no feelings for me.
I felt no
feelings for this relationship, just none. It's over, for real this time. One last kiss. I'll always love you, Korra. I'll always love you. You won't, okay.
The one last kiss bothered me. I was like, really? This isn't necessary, no.
I don't know. They can do,
like, people don't actually do that, you know? Like,
see, how would we know? I don't know.
to me, it's not really realistic. You're breaking up with somebody, why would you kiss them? You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but it's like a mutual breakup. I also like that Korra takes the charge on the breakup, too.
Yes, like, I do like that.
Mako seems to agree, but she... I don't know. I don't think this is handled well this season, Mako. I don't think it's ever handled well, and nope. I'm glad they're moving on. We don't need...
If we can avoid romance next season,
what I need is Mako not to be in a romance. Korra, whatever. But they do.
We're going to have, we need to have, like, a romantic talk podcast for some reason.
Also, from Mako's character perspective, he's just constantly with someone. We just need his character to see him without someone.
Just be a cop for a little bit, Mako. Chill. Yeah,
just
need some alone time.
Not even from a personal perspective, from a character perspective.
Like, can we talk about the detective part? Was that in this one?
That was last episode.
Oh.
Yeah.
I must have missed that, darn it.
That was like 2 episodes ago, yeah. Funniest part of the episode, Bolin's reaction to this.
He just like slides in like, you want a hug.
And then also the noises PJ Byrne makes with the hug, that's very realistic, right?
I loved that. That was the best part of my life.
Yeah, I really like that.
Bolin's facial expressions are just great.
Yeah, the animation on Bolin and PJ Byrne, both very well executed here. And I thought it was very well done. Okay, Korra addressing...
I was looking for a bit of closure with Asami.
Yeah, yep, definitely. Just none.
Save her
just
for nothing. Next season.
She gets
maybe
one line and she asks a question. Great.
Book 3 Asami.
Book 3 Asami. Yeah. There you go.
Book 3 Asami. Make it a thing.
It's done. It's decided.
Cora, no, book three. Do the thing.
Do the thing.
I like that. Cora is addressing the Southern Tribe. Water tribes will always be allies, but Southern Tribe is now independent. Tonarch's pointed. The Council of the Southern Elders now
is Katara the whole entire council?
Yes. Yeah. Katara decides to keep the portals open. Humans and Spurps will now be free to intermingle. I like that phrasing.
Cora, can you marry a spirit?
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be a problem
that's
now.
That's going to be the next thing. Marriage rights. Yeah.
Yep.
The thing is that some spirits seem animalish. Most of them seem able to talk, but some of them seem like to not have the intelligence and free will capabilities of humans. But some definitely do. So I don't know.
It parallels like animals and humans in our world.
Yeah, that's definitely possible, and I want that addressed. I think that'd be interesting. Cora is no longer the bridge. This is the most interesting part of this, because the bridge thing is a big part of Avatar. And now it's like...
like, it's always been present.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah. I don't think it bothers me so much. I mean, because I think I really like that she decided to do this, but it's just odd, I think. Now we're all of a sudden... because now when we describe the Avatar, we can't say they're the bridge between the worlds. Like, their title has been chopped down.
They master all the elements.
That's it. I guess they're a mediator between the spirits and the humans now.
We mentioned this before, but the mastering all elements part really doesn't seem significant this entire book as an identity of the Avatar.
Well, yeah.
Whereas in Avatar, The Last Airbender, was the thing.
Because Aang was like more spiritual than Korra on the whole, and Korra is more like elemental than Aang was.
Yeah,
well,
I agree.
Now do we think we have, like, maybe the reason it is because now we have a fuller picture of what it means to be the Avatar?
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. Combine Avatar plus this, plus Korra, and then get a fuller picture.
Like, we get it, Aang's spiritual, but now we've seen the journey on both sides of what it means to be the Avatar. And especially with the, now that the whole Rava, now we understand Rava, and now that the bridge is gone. Like, this is part of what it means to be the Avatar. You have to adapt, like what Aang did in the comics, and now Korra, they have to make these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Harmonic convergence caused a shift in the planet's energy. I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
I can feel it.
This is foreshadowing.
Jeff, what did you think that meant?
I had no idea. I was like, wait, what? Really? No? What?
Yeah, that's the first time you're telling us this. Okay.
Is this like Doctor Who, where like he can feel the Earth, and now this Korra has this deep connection to the planet? Like, this hasn't been addressed at all.
Ooh, Korra is now the Doctor. I like it.
Yes.
Things will never be the same again. We're entering a new age. I like ending the season on that. I thought that was really cool.
And
I just like that she's giving a speech. It's like, Aang doesn't do that.
Avatar is going to be known for panning up. That's going to be the thing.
Yes.
Like, when TV history classes happen, like, 20, 30, 40 years from now.
The legacy
of Avatar and Last Airbender. Yeah. Panning up.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's what it's going to be.
Okay. And Deus Ex Machina.
Yes, that's true. Okay, things I said we should have hit on. Not closing portals. I think we definitely talked about that. Jenora, Deus Ex, talked about that. Titans. Talked about that. Valeska, Macora breakup. Tenzin and Korra's mentor-mentee relationship.
I liked it. Because Tenzin's very last line, like, I have nothing left to teach you. You are the Avatar. Love it.
I think that was interesting. Does this mean Tenzin's done teaching Korra?
Yeah.
Well, he kind of said that, didn't he?
Well, yeah, but like, we still have two more seasons, you know?
So now Tenzin can just be like her like uncle.
Yeah.
He's, I guess.
Tenzin now replaces Bumi as the wacky
uncle. Oh, I wanted to say, like, I got some really Hamlet vibes from this episode.
Why?
Because, like, Korra killed her uncle, and that's what happened in Hamlet.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's true.
I just had a thought about the whole, like, the energy shift. I think it has been addressed in Avatar before that the Avatar is the spirit of the world incarnate, so that makes sense that there's that deep connection to the Earth itself.
Okay, and the spiritual energy of it.
Also, with the Hamlet thing, the whole thing last episode was, like, Unlock and Tonrock, that, like, really reminded me of The Lion King.
Yes.
Saw in Hamlet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the parallels.
Noasami, sad, talked about that. And Unalaq, I've ranted about
this.
He's dead.
He's terrible.
But no, just the use of... I really do stand... I think he is the worst villain in Avatar Korra.
I agree.
I think... I saw this thing on Tumblr. It's like, so are we going to kill off a waterbender in his 40s every season?
Who's next, then? What other waterbenders in their 40s do we know?
Mm.
Is Kaya
they
in her
better
40s?
Watch out.
I think she's
like in her 50s.
Yeah, or 60s, yeah. So she's safe. Okay.
Considering that, I think, kind of the whole thread I have on the forum, I think she's probably in her 60s.
Yeah. Okay.
Newberg.
Let's grade this. Okay, so I want grades on this episode, Light in the Dark, and then the finale overall. Let's start with Jeff.
Okay, I think this one deserves an 8, 7.5.
So like,
7.75.
So you like the last one better?
Yes. No, the first one I got a 9. So second half gets a lower score.
Yeah, that's what I meant the first episode, yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, yes. I like the first one first better.
Okay.
So overall, averaging those gives about an 8 and a bit. 8 and a bit. That's my score.
Nice. Okay, now I guess the other question I want to ask is, did you like this better than the book one finale?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Sam.
So grade on this part. I'll give it a 7.5. But I gave last episode a 7.5. I feel like I like this one better though, so maybe I'll give it like a 7.6.
Okay, that's very, it's such a high upgrade.
I know, just things and happen.
What about the finale overall?
This is not going to make any sense. I think I'll give it an 8 overall, I think it works better as a whole than just separately.
Okay. And did you like it better than the book one finale?
Yes.
Delaney.
All right. I know I'm kind of conflicted about whether or not I like this episode better than the than the episode before it. Like I think I'm leaning toward either tying them or making this one slightly higher. So I'm probably just going to go 7.5, 7.7 ish. Like after we've discussed it, I feel like this one had much more of an impact, and like I really appreciate what it's actually doing for like next season.
Yeah,
so that's what I feel like too.
Like I feel like I appreciate it more now that we've discussed it, because like yes, I hated the giant Godzilla battle because it was hilarious and I laughed the whole time. But like I think the rest of it, like what they're actually doing for the show and Korra making her decisions and the completion of her arc, I feel like. I guess I do like this one better than the first part.
Yeah, I feel like I like how it sets up next season better than what they're doing actually.
Yeah, like it's actually serving a purpose.
Yeah.
And you said, and the next question is like, if I like this better than season one, or is there another question?
No, that's it.
I think I do see the season one finale, like it didn't. There was no. It was a terrible resolution. Like. Yay, everyone's happy. But like, I mean, like, not that I dislike that Lin got her bending back and everything. It was just too easy. Like, there wasn't really, nothing really happened. There was no setup for the next season. You're just like, okay, stuff happened. All right, it's over now. Everyone's happy. Katara. Korra got no character growth.
You have to keep in mind that they wrote that season was all they were going to get.
Well, that's kind of terrible when you think about it.
Yeah.
That's what they were going to end on.
Yeah, it is.
When we think about it. And I don't know necessarily if it looks bad because now we have the season two, or if it would have just been bad in general.
I think it just looks really bad.
Yeah. Think, like, this one sets up, we have, I keep saying one to say Katara, Korra's character arc is completed, and well, not completed, but, like, for this season it's completed, and I really enjoyed that, and what they're doing for the world, like, this has actually impacted the world, like, a solution has been found. Season one, Korra just got her bending back, but, like, the actual problem in season one was not resolved.
Yeah.
The underlying issue just, like, has never been addressed. But season two, they had an issue and they solved it. Or at least they're beginning to. Like, something has been changed. The spirits have been released. Like, we're moving toward an actual change. Or, like, at least moving toward we have a change. They're moving toward a resolution.
Okay. I think I'm at a. I think this whole finale suffers majorly because of Unalaq. Which is why the fight scenes don't work for me, because the Unalaq as a character doesn't work. I think this episode is better than the last one, despite my many problems with it. I think there's a lot of stuff that just works better. I'm probably at around an 8 or an 8.5 for this episode. And for the finale as a whole, it's like an 8-ish average.
Oh, I didn't give that number, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, what did you give it for both?
Well, I guess for both, because I know you don't like it when we do this, but like, now I kind of feel bad because I'm giving it it seems so low, but I really did enjoy the finale. Like, it was really enjoyable to watch, even though I had so many issues with it. So I'd probably have to get, like, an 8.5 or a 9. Like, I mean, I just enjoyed it overall. Yes, there's a lot of issues with both. Okay. So as an overall experience, it was a lot better than just if you start analyzing both sides, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. The experience is better than if you get into it, but
because, like, I definitely got the epic experience.
Yeah, but I can't not start start picking on everything in the episode. It's not even nitpicking. The flaws are like
there are legitimate issues.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if Dylan didn't get mad at me, I would just give everything an I don't care of 10.
You already do anyway. Yeah. But anyway, I got 8 overall. See, I don't know how much I'm going to rewatch this in the future. It's like the book one finale. I haven't rewatched since the first rewatch of that. There's just too much stuff going on. Too much bad stuff.
I actually don't think I've ever rewatched the book one finale.
Yeah, it's...
I have
once. I think this is similar. To me, this is slightly better in the book one finale. But they're similar because of the glaping, the holes. Despite
yeah, book one was such a long time ago.
It was. Finale was more... had the epic feel than book one. It was definitely more... the scope was bigger and stuff. But yeah, so what did you guys give it? 30 people voted. 50% gave it a 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Great. You always do that. I don't know why you guys do that. That's not...
it's the feels.
You do not understand. No, it's not that you don't understand. People are more positive than us. 23%.
Well, we beat it to death, which is fine.
23% give it a 9 out of 10. 10% 7 out of 10. 6% 8 out of 10. 1 troll gives it a 5 out of 10. And 1 troll gives it a 6 out of 10. I could see giving it a 6 out of 10, honestly, if you really don't like the stuff. I like the guy that gave New Spiritual Age less than 5 out of 10. That was good. Oh, wait, someone gave this a less than 5 out of 10. Good job. Good job, person, for saying this was lower than average television. No, I'm not going to degrade your opinion, though. There's certainly a lot wrong with this. Okay. Your comments. First of all, we have a voicemail from Nick, so let's play that.
This finale is more than made up for the incredibly mediocre first half of Book 2 and surpassed Book 1 in quality. The animation in these two episodes was absolutely stunning. Darkness Falls blew my mind, and that talking mushroom was the greatest thing ever. I have no hesitation in rating it to 10. Makora ended as best as we could have expected, and I'm genuinely excited to see where the writers will go next in Book 3. Finally, thank you guys for this great podcast week after week.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. It's been a good season of discussions and stuff. I think for the people that would give it a 10 out of 10, I want you to rewatch it while thinking about what's wrong.
Yeah, I felt like
because
it was
for me, it was on the rewatch where I saw just the problems like affecting the quality. Yeah. But I mean, certainly entitled to, like, I think also these epic finales are very easy just to completely ignore how, the flaws because of just how well executed they are. We haven't emphasized how great the production value is.
And there was definite epicness in it, so it's understandable. Yeah. As an experience, it was incredible to watch.
Yeah, I agree. It was certainly an experience, and it was an experience, I think, the way
season 3 was.
I think it was a good ending to the book. Overall, yep. Especially because of the handling of Korra's character arc. Shorts Cofield on Tumblr asked us, where can Korra go from here? There's no overall plot in Korra, and it makes me angry.
Past lives.
So you mean, we're going to continue to see very season-to-season arcs, right, for villains and stuff. But we have to address the consequences of this finale in the last one, which is why I like it a lot.
We didn't really have any, season one, we were like, oh, we have no idea what's going on. We just know it's called spirits.
Season one... there's nothing from season one that was addressed here, right?
Yeah, there's no lead-in. It's just like, okay.
Yeah.
Season one might as well not even happen.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mom Racer on Tumblr asked us, I like the new status quo that the finale set up for book 3, but given how it got there, I don't know if I want to see it. What they had set up with Iroh was perfect. Violence and negative emotions only make spirits worse. You can't fight darkness with darkness, so you have to be a light in the dark. To hate me is to give me breath, to fight me is to give me strength, in quotes. And then the finale ended up being two kaijus fighting until one of them killed the other.
Yes.
What's darker than killing? So he's saying that there's like a contrast between the violence of that fight and the theme of the rest of the
season. I was also struck by that. Like, the entire time I was like, why isn't, there's no relevance. Like, that episode now makes absolutely no sense. We just had Iroh and we had feels, and now it had no, impact on everything that happened afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
It looked cool.
It did look cool. I agree. But I was wondering that while watching. It was just like, why are we fighting? Like, I thought the whole point was that they get stronger. Like, I don't get it.
I'm not sure if this whole season had, a pacifistic feel to it.
Well, no, I think that's impossible given that it's Korra, but...
Well, I think all of Aang's stuff certainly had the very pacifistic message, and how that was addressed in the finale made sense.
Yeah, true.
But... I don't know if I saw that as much here.
That was the whole point of that episode with Iroh, and it is kind of bothersome that they didn't address it afterwards at all.
Yeah, no mention yeah, of it I think at all. A New Spiritual Age seems to stand on its own more now as an episode than I wanted it to, but I will still watch that episode tons of times. I really love that. That's going to be one of our discussions in December, I think, is revisiting that episode. That's it for feedback. Any other comments on the finale for now?
It was a thing.
We are going we're going to discuss it again.
Well,
just one more time. Yes. And the season as a whole around Thanksgiving. That'll be our next podcast. Thanks for listening, guys.
Did have one thought. Yes. That's okay. Yes. I think I was trying to say it earlier. I don't know if like anyone heard me. It was just talking about why I think everyone likes this season more than season one is because, like the season three of Avatar, it was a viewing experience. And I don't necessarily know if it's because of the whole four episode impact or just because like it was an experience watching the season one finale. Was just like, okay, whatever, it happened.
I feel like overall I liked season one better.
That was my next question: book one or book two?
Book one.
Okay, so just as a season perspective, it like not like instead of comparing the finales.
Just as overall, we're going to address this in more depth in our podcast next podcast.
I can see. I actually think I'm probably that way too. Season one, but like finale wise.
Yeah, finale wise. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? It was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and one of my friends was like, "So what's going on with the new season of Korra?" And I was like, "Tried to explain what was happening. It was hard. I realized this thing is going all over the place. So yeah. I think it's a more contiguous storyline of book one."
Yeah. I think book one by a hair because of the overall strength. Like no episodes were duds like the beginning of this season.
Well, I think it's mainly due with Amon because Amon was such a power Amon in the beginning.
Yeah, the difference between Amon and Unalaq is
like ignoring the finale. Amon is such a powerful, he's such a powerful villain. It's just insane when you're watching it.
Yeah, I feel like it was more easier to get into season one because it's easier to understand and all the spiritual stuff that they seem to just be pulling out of nowhere.
And Amon got in your head.
Yeah.
Amon was a very good villain. Unalaq is... I want someone to disagree with me on Unalaq in, like, the forums or something. I'm curious. I was so glaring. We don't understand why... He gives reasons, but those are illogical reasons. How is he acquiring these illogical
reasons? But it works
reasons?
With Ozai, because Ozai is crazy, and we know he just wants power.
Ozai's power-hungry, and, he's like the leader of a nation. He also just isn't really important until that last episode.
Yeah,
Unalaq,
true.
This whole season is based on Unalaq, kind of. Varric is there to help guide it, and Varric's good, but yeah, Jeff?
Like two episodes ago, he said, like, don't believe everything you read, you know, when Korra said, like, you'll get 10,000 years of darkness.
Yeah.
It's like, what did he read? What does he think he knows?
Yeah, like,
that would have given him motivation. Mm-hmm.
But they didn't come out. There were a lot of throwaway lines this season.
There was sort of like one scene just with like Unalaq and Latu just like talking. Like just one scene that would have helped.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything. It was just there's nothing. Anyway, I've been your main host, Dylan Coase. I've been Jeff, Mel, Sam, Delaney. I co-created. Produce, edit the podcast, Second Rogers, AJ, Kevin, Jeff, musical credits, the Ishida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, and Luke Tripp, logo and banner by Kevin, Dong Feeling Zone by Jake, contributors, Garrett, Sierra, and Nick. Thank you very much.
You know what, Nick? Mel thought earlier that you were Nickelodeon.
So are we changing his nickname?
Maybe. But I like know. Nick and Knight.
Oh, it's Nick and Knight. I forgot.
Nick and Knight. So, G-Man, Sierra Mist, Nick and Knight, OT3.
Yes. Well, Nick and Knight works, Nickelodeon.
OT3, yeah.
Mel
saw the outline and said Nick donated, and she was like, did Nickelodeon the network donate?
What are $3,000 mics?
Yeah, exactly. They gave us several thousand, but no, they did not. If you're curious in seeing who we are, check us out, our bios on the podcast page. We will be continuing the podcast, despite the fact that the episode discussions are over. They just get lower numbers, but we go all year. It'll eventually become bi-weekly instead, or not bi-weekly, every other week instead of every week, but we keep going, stay with us.
Semi-weekly.
Semi-weekly, yeah. In December, we'll having weekly discussions about this. And
maybe someday the Hot Pockets will return.
Maybe, but that's not.
We tried to do it last week. We had a bit of a fight.
You guys need Ohana.
Yeah,
yes.
Ohana,
yeah.
Allie and Mel had like this huge fight, so maybe another... day.
Give us your feedback on the forums on this podcast and this episode, daimufang.net/forums. It's easy to sign up, and you can go to the From the Spirit World forum and then the thread, and you can tell us about the episode. But yeah, any last thoughts before we sign off?
Nope.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe we should do this when the episode discussion happens, but maybe, like, people were saying that releasing it online was a bad idea in the finale.
It's like they're ignoring the ratings now. It's like they don't even care.
Maybe Russell Coyle will just be direct to DVD.
No, they wouldn't do that.
No.
We didn't talk about the decision.
We talked about it yesterday, the decision to release it online. I don't really understand it.
Direct to DVD.
It doesn't really do anything. The ratings Netflix. Aren't going to be lowered because they're released online, I don't think. But I think they might think it'll raise the ratings because of hype, but I don't think it'll really do that.
There's either. No logic behind it.
They did it for some reason.
Maybe they think
they're appeasing the fandom, but I would have preferred it just waiting a week because now we have nothing next week, right?
Yeah, it's exactly. Over.
Yeah, sad. Now we just wait for some form of spoilers.
Yeah.
Next book. Brian did say today that he thinks the wait between books 2 and 3 will be much less. Yeah.
Well, I hope so because he knows like 400 some days.
Yeah. So yeah, it'll be less and stuff. Okay, thanks for listening, guys. What are we gonna end on?
I am so dumb with spirits.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that's a good one.
We are so dumb with spirits.
Yeah.
That's how I feel exactly.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys. 1, 2, 3. We are so dumb with spirits.
So dumb with spirits.